Don't ask.
Come on, man.
No, we're I'm all right.
We're not going to surrender to the sluggishness, man. We got in. Everybody, it was so weird because it happened the same time that it happened with you. We were up. We were downstairs doing our homework, putting together the show, listening to Kerry's speech, trying to get organized, and it took a little longer than usual, and we hit that wall because usually we're up here like 30 past the hour.
Yeah.
So it was coming up like 37 past the hour, and I felt myself going, oh, body says sleep. Again, and I look over at Riley. He's like, "Oh no, me going too." Because usually we're up here 30 after, and we're in it. We're looking at the microphone. We got it in our face.
We're a little hyper, but I was feeling like Frank Robinson, the guy. He's a manager for one of the baseball teams in Major League Baseball, and they had a camera shot of him. Dead sound asleep in the middle of a ball game. And that's what I felt like this morning. It's been a long day. I got a long day coming. But, hey, you know, we're here to do the people's business.
Oh, yeah. And I was cranky when I got in because I have this ongoing issue with my wife. We have in the house in Los Angeles out there in Highland Park.
Mm-hmm.
Horrendous ant problem. Horrendous ant problem.
Oh, man, that'll drive you nuts. What kind, red?
No, just those little black ants, little dumb army ants or whatever they are. Very organized, though. You know what's amazing about ants? It's like you wake up and you're like, what the hell are all these ants doing here? And then you're like, wow, look how organized they are. You know, they're like geniuses. You know what I mean?
Can you move my couch over here?
Exactly, but they're like all in a line. They'll travel for miles. But every time I go home, I end up covered in ants. I hate the ants. The ants get on the cat food. The cats can't eat the food. The last time my wife went out of town when we went to Seattle and I met her there, she literally... I told her to get an exterminator like 3 months ago. Just have a guy come, right? So a guy was supposed to come, and she missed it. You know, we were at it. I don't know what happened, but she missed it, right? So this is about 3 months ago. And it keeps going on with the ants. And then, like, the last time we went out of town, she had to put 4 or 5 different cat bowls all over the house in case the ants got one of them, the cats could go find. And I'm like, it's a weird approach to the problem, you know? So it's starting to drive me nuts, you know? And I just said to her, she finally, her dad recommended this denatured soil earth stuff, which is something they use in pool filters. It's some sort of a natural, it's something rendered soil, or I don't know what it is, but you put it around the house, and apparently the ants track it in on their feet, and they kind of shred themselves. But it's you know, it's not poison. So she got that yesterday, and she's going to put it out today because she's coming into town this week. And I said, you know, maybe we should do this now. But, you know, it's one of those issues, Riley. I don't know if you have this with your wife. It's sort of like it's one of these little things.
Is it 6 o'clock? I have it with my wife. She's not up yet.
No, but it's one of those little weird things where it's like, why can't we just get past this? Like, I'm tired of talking about the ants. You know, it's just like, let's just get an exterminator in. And she's like, you know, why are you yelling at me? I don't know, because it's been 3 months. It's been 3 months with the exterminator.
I know the feeling.
You know? And then, like, all of a sudden, I'm the ass. You know? You know what I mean? Like, I'm the bad guy because I'm like, can we just do this? And then it got ugly, and then it was one of those mornings, you know, where you just, like, one thing just topples the house of cards. You know, even with John Kerry kicking some butt yesterday, you know, on TV, you know, and everything's looking good. Then I look at one, you know, nasty email from some conservative who just, you know, doesn't understand what entertainment is or speculation or maybe me saying something that's an opinion or, you know, and then he's like, you know, how dare you say that about the president? Because it's funny and it's my show. But, but that on top of the ants, on top of the cat poop that I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis, these cats are just, you know, they're crap machines. It's unbelievable. It's sort of like, oh, my God.
So the cat lady didn't show.
No, the cat lady didn't come with the, well, she called. You know, she's going to come tomorrow. She's overextended. She's out saving the world from stray cats, and I've set the trap for the mother. All the cats are fine. You know, I'm not complaining. It's like I could have a kid. I guess that's a little more challenging, but I don't know. You know?
Trust me, it's a lot more challenging.
I realize that like, there's another thing I'm realizing with the cats, if I could go on, is that, you know, my father's a little nuts. You know what I mean? I've grown to like him, you know, over time. But, you know, I always thought I was like him. I always thought that I was like this manic, depressed, weird, nutty person. And it turns out I'm like... Smarty Pants is looking at me. Smarty Pants Arson is like, no, not you. Look, I am a little erratic, but I would not say that, you know, my dad doesn't want me to talk about this on the air, so I won't. But my
Go
mother.
Go ahead.
No, I'm erratic, but I don't fluctuate dramatically. I mean, if I have any sort of bipolarity, it happens within 15 minutes. You know, there's no extended periods of time. It's like, la, 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 la. Oh, I'm exhausted and depressed. You know what I mean? And then it comes back again. But I'm finding out I'm more like my mother with these animals, you know, and it took me a long time to realize why my mother always, you know, took in stray cats and everything else is because it's not so much it's a charitable thing. It's like, it's nice to have control over things that won't talk back to you in English or fight with you. You know what I mean? But then you realize like you really have no control and you have to delegate this, this interesting relationship with these animals. And, they're all fine. Everything's going to be fine. So now let's move on to more important things.
More important things.
John Kerry, I watched him yesterday, you know, after the show. I was watching him on CNN Live, and then I fell asleep in the middle, but it wasn't his fault.
He was at NYU. He was at my alma mater.
Yeah, and he was good, man. He was good, because yesterday I was saying, why can't he just be clear about the war? And he was pretty clear about the war. You know, he basically said that, you know, Bush is, you know, executed extremely bad judgment, you know, and it was we're going to play some pieces of it.
Yeah. We got a lot of it, too.
Yeah, and I think it's important to play as much as possible. We'll do that after the break in just a second. But, you know, he wants to push the UN to make good on Resolution 1546, which calls on members to provide troops, training for Iraqi security forces, protection of the UN mission, more financial assistance, real debt relief. And he said, how's he going to do it? By defining specific roles for training Iraqis and securing the border, give other nations a stake in Iraq by letting them in on oil development and letting them bid on contracts. So that's part of his more international plan. And there was an argument. I watched Jamie Rubin on Crossfire, who was excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we finally got something on Bush. It's very clear, is that there's a tremendous amount of incompetence and bad judgment in this unilateral attack on Iraq. It was based in a lie, and now it's chaos. And, you know, he is out there, you know, in classic Bush form, you know, literally saying, hey, freedom's coming. A guy's head was cut off this morning.
Eugene Armstrong, according to people who've seen the video and who... I guess it's the U.S. military.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just the idea that he's in this delusionary world where he can sit there and preach freedom and democracy like it feels good. I was watching him yesterday. Like, he was getting all juiced up like a preacher, like, freedom, democracy. And I'm like, dude, I can, like, you're speaking on this channel. I'll flip two channels over, and I see chaos and death. And then I go back to Bush. He's like, it's coming. Freedom, the freedom trail is here, you know. You know, I'm like, what are you looking at? And Kerry is basically assessing the situation. He's addressing the fact that, you know, he voted to give presidential authority, and he basically just out and out said, look, you know, he misused the authority. You know, he didn't have a international coalition of any sort of, you know, real strength or importance. He made a decision on his own to, you know, to go in there and do this. And from all indications, you know, I'm reading Richard Clark's book, from all indications, he coerced his inner circle to find him enough evidence to go to Iraq so he could do it, you know, right when he saw the opportunity, which was when we should have been fighting in Afghanistan, effectively diminishing bin Laden and the al-Qaeda network there.
Well, that's why Cheney wound up going out to Langley after the CIA and telling, you know, top CIA officials, look, this isn't the intelligence we need. This isn't the intelligence we know is out there. And, of course, this has to do with weapons of mass destruction and a tie between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Those are the two pivotal points that Bush used to push this war, and both have been proven to be completely empty, completely false.
Yeah, and Goss today is like sort of saying, like, well, maybe there was some, you know, over some shortcomings in the information. I'm going to get the phrasing you used in just a second, because we're going to talk about that, maybe not in this hour, but the next hour. And Novak, Bob Novak of all people, or as one of our bloggers calls, Novakula, which I think is pretty, he writes this piece that says, you know, secretly the Bush administration is planning to cut and run. And I don't know what the spin on that is, you know, because, you know, anything coming out of Novak has got to be incredibly suspect, certainly from the left. You know, why is he saying something, you know, that's completely against what the president and what the administration is putting out there? I don't know what it's
because the neocons want to keep Bush on message and on point. That's
right, but why is Novak saying that they're going to cut and run, that they're, like, as soon as, like, November 3rd, if Bush gets in office, which he won't, that they're going to pull everyone
they're
out
gonna
of
They're going to pull out next year, because the neocons want them to stay to promote their idea of what should happen in the region. So he's carrying water for the neocons.
How, though, if they're going to leave?
Well, that's the whole point. He'll stop them from leaving. They leaked this early, and then Bush has to jump up and deny it. I said, oh, no, we're not leaving. No, we can't leave.
But he's one of their guys, Novak.
He's a neocon guy.
I know, but the neocon plan was to, you know, build democracy and make it all work there. And then, you know.
And what is Novak saying? Novak is saying they're going to pull out regardless of whether they build democracy. And that's against the neocon creed.
Right. I'm still not seeing how it works for the administration.
It doesn't. It works for the neocon wing of the administration.
Okay.
Colin Powell ain't happy about this, I guarantee you.
All right, well, we're going to have to explain. You're going to explain it a little more clear to me after during the break. There's something that's like it's hitting a wall in my head. I'm short-circuiting. What else have we got coming up? We got Kerry Sound, which is going to be good. We got the Novak story, which we'll get into a little more. There was a beheading, which was awful. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Goss. CBS, Dan Rather. Listen, all these dumb Republican, you know, spouting pie holes. Like, he's got to resign. Rather's got to resign.
Yeah, right.
He took false information. He didn't investigate enough and lied to the American people. Why don't you hold your president to the same standards, you douchebags? We'll be back in a second on Air America Radio.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. If you love your lungs, then purify the air in your home with the same technology used in our U.S. submarine fleet, the same advanced technology that's in my Orrick tabletop air purifier. I call my air machine a lung saver. You'll call it a miracle. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200, and breathe easier with the best air purifier you can buy.
You know college football. You want interviews with the top college coaches in the country. You want analysis from the very best in the business, and you want it now. Sirius is now offering College Sports Radio with the Sirius College Coaches Show. 3 hours of the very best analysis for Saturday's game with Coach Terry Bowden and legendary college announcer Jack Arute.
The Sirius College Coaches Show, 9 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern, Saturdays on Sirius Sports Action 123.
How does arguing with your spouse affect your kids? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Some family experts say that lots of arguing results in more aggression between kids. But there's an upside to observing conflict between parents. When you handle it properly, kids can learn how to discuss problems and how to resolve them. And they can see that relationships and family life improve as a result. So, it's okay to disagree openly and calmly with your spouse, as long as you respect and listen to one another. Focus on working toward a solution and not letting anger get the better of you. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. TV personality Luke Perry.
All right, I got a little pop quiz for you. It's about me. What was my zip code? What city was it in? Name three kids I hung out with in the lunchroom. Name three kids your child hangs out with in the lunchroom.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
About the issues. We're fighting for our lives here.
Good morning. It's 20 past the hour. I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We are talking about John Kerry's speech yesterday at NYU. We are talking about the tragic beheading of an American in Iraq. Against that backdrop, we have two reactions from John Kerry and one from Bush in terms of, like, just knowing that that was in the news, all right, that that was happening, that this guy was beheaded. And that happened yesterday. Was it afternoon? It was before, wasn't it?
It was. I think it was not long after we got off the air, which would have made it late afternoon, I guess, in Baghdad.
Right, 5:47 p.m. This was posted yesterday. So that means that maybe it hadn't been reported by the time those two spoke, but it definitely overshadows what the two of them are saying, is that you have John Kerry, who we should listen to a little bit now. What do we got? What have you got planned there, Mark?
Yeah, now, we should set this up by saying, first of all, that there have been 300 people killed between insurgent attacks and U.S. military strikes in Iraq in the last 7 days.
Unbelievable.
Now, we're talking about something on the order of 44 people a day dying in Iraq.
Right.
John Kerry at NYU essentially is getting rough with Bush about this death toll and about the fact that he is... looking at Bush as an incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's been really, Mark, kind of nervous about saying this before.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's taking off the gloves, he's getting rough, and he's saying that there's really no excuse for the choices that Bush has made. Let's listen to John Kerry.
The president now admits to miscalculations in Iraq. Miscalculations. This is one of the greatest understatements in recent American history.
Yay.
His miscalculations were not the equivalent of accounting errors. They were colossal failures of judgment, and judgment is what we look for in a president.
Yes.
And this is all the more stunning because we're not talking about 2020 hindsight. We're not talking about Monday morning quarterbacking. Before the war, before he chose to go to war, bipartisan congressional hearings, major outside studies, and even some in his own administration predicted virtually every problem that we face in Iraq today. This president was in denial. He hitched his wagon to the ideologues who surround him, filtering out those who disagreed, including leaders of his own party and the uniformed military. The result is a long litany of misjudgments with terrible and real consequences. The administration told us we would be greeted as liberators. They were wrong. They told us not to worry about the looting or the sorry state of Iraq's infrastructure. They were wrong. They told us we had enough troops to provide security and stability, defeat the insurgents, guard the borders, and secure the arms depots. They were tragically wrong. They told us we could rely on exiles like Ahmed Jalabi to build political legitimacy. They were wrong. They told us we would quickly restore an Iraqi civil service to run the country and a police force and an army to secure it. They were wrong. In Iraq, this administration has consistently overpromised and underperformed. And this policy has been plagued by a lack of planning, by an absence of candor, arrogance, and outright incompetence.
Not to mention lies. Not to mention lies. Well, when did it become so, not appropriate for people to say liar anymore outside of Al Franken? And lying. And you're a liar. Oi, oi, oi.
They like to call it straying from the truth these days. Or
yeah, but
they didn't tell the truth.
But this is like a great, it's really, Kerry, the thing is you have to extrapolate from Kerry. And like I said yesterday, I think that what he's saying is that the war was a mistake. He wouldn't have done it that way. He believes it. And we have other soundbite from Kerry that we're going to play throughout the show. But what I want to talk about is, like, before we get too off off message here, is, like, we were talking about the Bob Novak piece.
Yeah.
Which is essentially, you know, Bob Novak's piece opens with, inside the Bush administration policymaking apparatus, there is strong feeling that U.S. troops must leave Iraq next year. This determination is not predicated on success in implanting Iraqi democracy and internal stability. Rather, the officials are saying, ready or not, here we go, which is, you know, cut and run. Now, what I was misunderstanding you before was because for some reason, I was assuming Bob Novak was reporting. But there's no reason to ever assume that because he's a stooge for the Republican Party, right?
Yeah.
Now, what you're saying to me is that by him doing this, this is some sort of trial balloon to wake up the neocons.
Yeah, and to say to them, because remember that the neocons oppose any kind of an immediate withdrawal. Remember, what Novak is talking about here is George W. Bush taking Howard Dean's position on the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
Pulling the troops out.
Right.
No matter what else happens, if the country goes to civil war, so be it.
What is he, a cipher? Talk about, it's not even a flip-flop. They'll just appropriate anything for whatever amount of time that they can use it for.
Well, this is a scenario that Novak, I believe, has been told is a possibility, and the people who told him probably don't want to see it happen. Therefore, Novak writes about it and then puts the president in the position of having to react to it,
right.
Which he will.
Right.
I don't see anything in this particular piece about it, but the president's people will, in fact, react to this column, and they're going to react by saying, oh, no, we are not going to pull out. Check one, victory, score one in the column of the neoconservatives.
But according to Sidney Blumenthal's piece, who we'll talk to later in the show, you know, this is corroborated, is that the word corroborated, by many military thinkers, by ex-military, by current military people that say that, you know, what's going on there is unsurmountable, you know, over the long haul.
Yeah.
It's just like, because of the type of guerrilla warfare that's going on, the type of the insurgency is building strength and completely unpredictable, and there is no real strategy that, you know, we are in an unsurmountable problem. And I think that Bush right now, it just seems that all he's doing is rallying the people. He's rallying the frightened. You know, he's rallying the people that refuse to see, you know, clarity or any reality of the situation and just want to be deluded. If we're going to accuse him, like Kerry did, and I think he's right in saying that, there is a pathological denial in his pitch, and there's a pathological denial to the people that follow him.
I agree with you. Coming up, the president's palm pilot, the liberal agenda, and John Kerry, this time, not at NYU, but on David Letterman, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream, man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call American Satellite. 1-800-264-0071. That's 1-800-264-0071. Ask how you can get Total Choice Premier free for 4 months, a $360 value. 1-800-264-0071. Call now.
Add $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends October 30th, 2004.
New customers only. Annual programming commitment required.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Federal authorities and New York City police are looking for an upstate New York man who they believe has plans on taking the life of President George W. Bush while he's in New York. Authorities, along with Secret Service, say they have credible evidence and a statement from the man's ex-wife who says he's dangerous. There's a report this morning that the Bush administration is about to do what it said it would not do in Iraq, cut and run. The White House has been unusually quiet about the recent spate of deadly attacks by the insurgents in that country. CBS Television and veteran journalist Dan Rather have issued an apology about his recent series of reports on George Bush's record in the Texas Air National Guard 30 years ago. Rather and the network say they were misled. Despite this, there are reports that some believe Bush did receive preferential treatment to escape duty in Vietnam. And a federal judge has ordered the Federal Election Commission to enact tougher restrictions on how millions of dollars are spent on campaigns. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Sirius NFL Radio, Channel 124, is all football all the time. Hear breaking NFL news and scores 24 hours a day, along with exclusive interviews.
Let's talk football. Let's talk football.
Commentary and analysis from top players and coaches. All-star staff includes Shannon Sharp, Chris Turner, Dan Reeves, John Riggins, and Keyshawn Johnson. When it's the NFL you want, it's the NFL you can't get. NFL Radio, 124.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Blake is getting married and wants the order of his financial attack. My advice next.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Blake needs a financial game plan.
So I have an engagement ring that's going to happen. I plan on buying a new car over the next year and am hoping to get into a new house by the end of next year as well.
Wow, how much do you make a year?
Between the two of us, we really right around $90,000 a year.
How much do you have in savings?
$2,500 at this time.
And how much are you going to spend on a ring?
Probably about $2,300.
And so we got some savings to do before we buy a nice used car, right?
Yeah, and you'll see, that's one of our problems is we tend to spend like drunken sailors.
Well, dude, I mean, if you're going to work and make $100,000, you ought to have something to show for it more than a big bunch of payments. That's what this show's about every day, is getting control of your most powerful wealth-building tool, which is your income. I want you to have a nice car. I just don't want to have you. I think I'd probably walk right up the schedule you gave me, and I'd do ring, then cash for a decent car, move up in car, and then start saving, have an emergency fund in place, and about a year after we're married, we start talking about a down payment on a house.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
33 past the hour on Air America Radio. The show you're listening to is Morning Sedition. Look, you know, if you've been listening for a few minutes, we've been talking about this Bob Novak piece. And Bob Novak reports from a leak inside of the Bush administration that they are planning to cut and run. Now, this is coming from Novak, Novakula, as one of our bloggers so appropriately calls this guy. This guy, you know, elicits more contempt in me just sitting there looking at his dumb mug on television even for a minute with those dumb false teeth of his and that dumb round head. But what do you think he could be doing here? I'd like to hear some intelligent, you know, reaction to why would he be reporting this guy who is a Republican Party stooge. Why would he be saying that this administration is planning on cutting and running when the president is out there saying that freedom is just around the corner? Look the other way of those beheadings and American deaths. So call us if you've got some sort of intelligent insider speculation into this. Even non-intelligent insight and speculation. Complete conspiratorial crap is fine with me. 866-303-2270. Let's do the presidential palm pilot because Ramon, for some reason, he's like, he hands it to me. He says, I got to talk to you outside. So let me, I got to get through this and through this segment to see what he needs. Probably needs money. You know, I think he's in trouble. Here's the palm pilot for this morning. Here's the schedule. 7 o'clock a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. I am a United Nations of One. 8:10 a.m. Meet with the Prime Minister of India. Discuss the filth and violence coming out of Bollywood. 9:20 a.m. Meet with U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan. Note, if he starts talking about our illegal war in Iraq, confront him with a wad of unpaid U.N. parking tickets. Yeah. Giuliani will get those right up to him. 10:30 a.m. Speak to the U.N. General Assembly. Note, make sure there are translators for the English-speaking nations. There you go. 12:15 p.m. Meet with Prime Minister of Iraq. Note, tell him it's better to burn up than fade away. Yeah. 1:15 p.m. Attend luncheon given by the U.N. Secretary General. Invade buffet unilaterally before getting a resolution. 3:20 p.m. Meet with the Prime Minister of Japan. Ask him why Datsun changed their name to Nissan. No, this has bothered me for years. 4:05 p.m. Meet with the President of Afghanistan. Ask him how America's Operation Cut and Run is going. 4:40 p.m. Meet with the Presidents of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Flip coin to see which side gets to release Osama in October. Then break tension by making a America-stan joke. 7:25 p.m. Visit with Sister Nirmala, the Superior General for the Missionaries of Charity. Note, mention my extensive work of providing relief for the extremely wealthy. 8:45 p.m. Attend reception. Note, tell hilarious anecdotes about all the funny talking a-holes I met today. Yeah. 11 p.m. Note, schedule 2 weeks vacation to make up for today. There you go. All right. Let's
Long see. Day, huh?
Let's see. We got. It looks like we got a quick response here. Okay. Linda, what do you got in the Bronx?
Hey, Linda.
Hey.
Good morning, you guys. How you doing?
All right. How are you both?
And good.
Riley, I'm going to be sending you more information.
Okay, Linda.
Okay.
All right. About Novak.
We'll cover that later, Riley. I'm not sure what that was about, but I suppose it's legitimate.
It's she's my version of Ramon, okay?
Okay.
Nothing nefarious. It's just some local things.
No, some good stuff.
I know, okay. Mark from way, way back, okay?
Yep. Yeah, he's a good guy. You can vouch for him, right?
So, now to you,
yeah.
Mr. Marin.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I'm calling to disagree with your statement that Robert Novak is a neocon.
That was Mark Riley.
No, I'm just saying he's playing to the neo. I don't think he is one.
No,
I think
he's
just
okay.
Playing to one.
All right. Totally. And let me quickly say at least why I don't think he is. And I guess Riley does agree. Maybe you both do.
Okay.
But he actually has famously been opposed to the Iraq War.
Okay. Novak has?
Yes, he has.
Okay.
Yes, he has. He loves the Bush administration because he has never seen a tax cut that he has not liked.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, but I do agree that, and this is really why I'm thinking that Novak has done this.
Okay.
Novak's whole credo is, if I get the scoop, I'm going to put it out there. No matter what it is.
Right.
No matter how immoral, no matter how often he was warned not to do it, the most glaring example being putting out Valerie Flame's name.
Sure.
As a CIA agent.
Right.
So really for Novak, I believe, he has excellent sources. He likes to demonstrate, he likes to prove that he's got more connected to the good news, supposedly, mm-hmm. than all his other colleagues. So if he gets something, he puts it out there.
Right.
Now, it's very likely to redound positively for the neocons for the reasons that both of you have stated, and I guess more widely, what both of you have stated.
Okay.
Because of the fact that their motive for putting it out there is that they do not want to see the troops pulled out.
Right.
But
okay.
I think Novak is doing it more from the standpoint that he gets the scoop, he's going to be first with the scoop, and so that's his claim to fame.
Kind of like an elderly Matt Drudge.
Right, so he's going to put a little fire under the Bush administration's butt to make them go, no.
And plus, as Riley said, you know, he drudges it, Judge throws everything out there, sees what sticks, you know, so I think, in a way, yes.
Okay, thanks for your call, and I appreciate it.
You know, I'm curious, Mark, if any of this is coming out of the State Department.
Yeah? What would that mean to you?
It would mean, see, I can't see Colin Powell, either publicly or even in private, being in favor of a unilateral pullout from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see a scenario where people in his department see that as a last viable alternative. I mean, look, if 300 people a week continue to be killed in Iraq, it is an American nightmare. Bush, on the other hand, if they wait till early next year to start the pullout, what can they do to him?
Yeah.
You know, he's not up for re-election, assuming he wins. That's obviously the big part of this.
Yeah, no one apparently is going to call him on his BS because this guy can flip-flop like no one I've ever seen before. And the core following of his base will still be there. XL, listening to X, I'm a trucker. How you doing, buddy?
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, what's on your mind, man?
Yeah, my position, as I was saying, I think the intent is all along for the administration to pull out as soon as he solidified that election. This thing has been completely out of control as far as the neocon is concerned, and they don't like being out of control, as we all know.
Right.
That's a bad position. And they have two alternatives. They either go in there and pretty much nuke them. That's what they're saying. Yeah, let's nuke the whole place.
Yeah.
Or pull out. That's their two options.
Right, okay.
And I believe that's what they're going to do the first of the year. You're going to get out of there and try to save face and save this legacy, try to rehabilitate the legacy as soon as they can.
Okay, thanks
for
your call.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't understand how... You know, what would that mean to, I mean, that would be a tremendous lie and a tremendous flip-flop. And how would he sell that to the American people? Or would the American people just be so relieved that we're pulling out and leaving the place a mess? I mean, what does that mean the American people are really made of?
What it will say is the American people can't do anything about it if he gets reelected. What are they going to do? The worst they can do is try to impeach him for it, and he's gambling that that's not going to happen. Or the people inside his administration. I won't say him, because he hasn't spoken publicly about it yet. But the people inside his administration, the people that leaked this to Robert Novak, figure if he wins, he's home free, he can do whatever he wants. Let the Iraqis kill themselves. That's, I think, essentially the way they're looking at this now, rather than end up killing Americans.
Unbelievable. We're going to hear what John Kerry has to say about his vote on the war. Isn't that the one we're going to listen to after this from David Letterman's show last night? So stay with us. 41 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Pontiac Grand Am.
Oh.
I started getting this noise. I guess it would be a combination of a flute and a bass drum.
Perfect harmony. Car Talk. Weekends at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern on NPR Now 106 and noon on Sirius NPR Talk 107.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do? Tell other people? Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
They're in your bathroom cabinet, under the kitchen sink, in your garage. They're ordinary household products that kids as young as 10 sniff to get high. What these kids don't know is that sniffing can cause instant death. Talk to your kids. Know where they're going, who they're with, and what they're doing. If you know what your kids are up to, they're much less likely to sniff inhalants. Awareness. The anti-drug.
When is the right time to start talking with children about marijuana? Before they see or hear any pro-use messages or images. Before anyone their age has used it. Before anyone encourages them to try it. Before it becomes their first step towards substance abuse, school problems, health and safety risks, and illegal activity. Reality check. It's never too soon to talk to your kids about marijuana. For tips on getting started, call 1-800-729-6686.
Hi, I'm Al Franken. Sirius Satellite Radio and Headcount urge you to make a difference. This year, it's more important than ever to wave that flag and let your voice be heard. If you're not registered, go to headcount.org, get serious, and vote.
Hi, I'm Bobby Orr with the Dead.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead.
Hi, this is Trey Anastasio reminding you that this year, it's more important than ever to get out and vote.
To register, go to www.headcount.org.
This November, show up and vote.
Hallelujah. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
We're coming alive. It's a morning sedition on Air America Radio. You're listening to us, Mark and Mark in the Morning, as the billboards will say soon.
Real soon. Maron's been working on it. He's stopped playing with people around here.
That's right, man. I went right up to Al and I said, Al, I'm tired of all this about being about you. And he goes, your name again? I'm kidding. Oi, oi. But anyway, so let's take one more Novak call, can we, Chris? Cole in Missouri, how are you?
Hey, Cole.
Hey, how you guys doing?
All right, man. How you doing?
Doing all right, Mr. Marin. Man, I've been a long-time fan, man. This is unreal.
Right on.
Calling you from Missouri. Believe this or not, we don't get a lot of local liberal talk radio here. We get a lot of conservative. We have, like, an entire channel. Plays everything from Hannity to O'Reilly to everything. And I'm getting you on XM, so that's the only way you can get it in these parts, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, thanks, Cole. I'm glad you're listening, man.
Man, and I say, I'm telling you, man, it's crazy. Listen, my thing about Novak real quick is that, you know, I thought about it for a second. You know, you kind of wonder, there's so many people worried about this being a quagmire. Imagine that, worried about us being stuck there for 10 years. Imagine that.
Right.
But maybe this is just sort of like they're kind of trying to float an opinion out there, kind of like, well, hey, you know, we're going to be there for 10 years. And, well, wait a minute, Novak said we're pulling out. So maybe they're just kind of trying to give us, like, maybe the illusion of some sort of exit strategy.
Right, to see how people respond, to see, like, you know, if people would be willing to just, you know, forsake everything the president has said and go, yeah, let's get out of there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or maybe that's kind of like them trying to float that out as an alternative to people being worried about us getting stuck there. Speaking of one of the president's, his best quote of the last 3 months, I got to say, you know, of course, the one where he says, it's pretty relieved to hear it when he said, you know, that reason these terrorists, you know, they just hate freedom, right?
Yeah.
They just hate freedom. Man, I was relieved, man. I thought I was going to have to think about this. I was thinking this was like a complex issue. And I'm like, oh, they just hate freedom? Jeez, I can wrap my head around that. I'm glad, man. I thought I was going to have to really do this. Hey, whatever you say, George, light them up, you know?
here, let me, I'll play, Ed, thanks for calling, Cole. And, yeah. And for you, I'm going to do this.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
That's a call in Missouri.
All right.
Surrounded by
XM.
Surrounded by conservative radio hosts and radio stations.
All right. You can't really call it streaming on XM, can you?
Well, it's he's listening. And it's interesting that you literally, when these guys call from these areas that are primarily conservative and they just have no outlet to this type of talk radio, it sounds like I can't talk too loud because, you know what I mean? It's like, I got it turned down real low, but I need help. I need help. We're in trouble
please,
out here.
Please come see me.
So let's hear Kerry on Letterman last night, Kayla. What he's addressing?
Dave asks him about the perception that he's flip flopped in terms of the war in Iraq. Something that, if Novak is to be believed, George W. Bush has in his future as well. But here is an exchange between David Letterman and John Kerry.
Why is the impression lingering that you're undecided about the commitment to the war, the issue of flip-flopping on that and other matters?
Because there's a...
What was your position initially on the war?
I supported the authority. I'll tell you exactly why. Because everyone in America thinks that if you vote to give the president the authority to go to war, you voted to actually go to war. And the fact is, we voted to give the president the authority, and he himself said that war was not inevitable. We gave him judgment, the judgment to go to war or not to go to war, but to use that authority to get Saddam Hussein to live up to a set of standards, i.e. disarm. The president didn't have the patience to wait until he brought the coalition together he said he would. He did not exhaust the remedies of the United Nations, and he did not go to war as a last resort, which is what he promised. So that's when I got upset, because I thought he broke faith with those of us who gave him the authority under a certain set of circumstances. And I think he's broken faith each step of the way since then by running a war that has each time left America more isolated and less safe.
And voted subsequently for the funding of the $87 billion initially?
Because I saw what was happening. I voted against it. I absolutely voted against it. I'm glad I voted against it. Because we now see that $20 billion hasn't even been spent effectively. Most of it's going to Halliburton in fraud and no-bid contracts, which is completely inappropriate. I'd fire Halliburton tomorrow.
There you go. There you go.
Fire Dick Cheney?
Hell yeah. Here's something else he said, and this is how Bush responded to it. Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator who deserves his own special place in hell. But that was not in itself a reason to go to war. The satisfaction we take in his downfall does not hide this fact. We have traded a dictator for chaos that has left America less secure. That is provable that there's more terrorism there than there ever was, because there wasn't any terrorism there before. Saddam had no connection to Al-Qaeda or terrorist groups, and now the place is teeming with them. And in response, George W. Bush You know, the faux Christian blow monkey AWOL puppet of the Cheney regime's Republican death cult says he's saying he prefers the stability of a dictatorship to the hope and security of democracy. The hope and security of democracy. No, what John Kerry was saying is we could have waited until we efficiently took down Al-Qaeda. And if you think that what's going on there now, really, the hope and security of democracy, really? Let's tell that to the family of the guy who just beheaded there. You know, let's tell that to them, to Eugene
Armstrong's
family. I mean, it's unbelievable that the news of this day, that Bush is sitting there glibly talking about freedom and democracy, yet people are dying daily in many, you know, in numbers.
Not only that, Mark, George W. Bush has supported dictatorships all over the planet.
So
for him
dead.
To sit there and say, well, John Kerry preferred, you know, the stability of a dictatorship, the United States... and you're right, his father, too,
supported
the stability of dictatorships all over the globe. He's meeting with Musharraf today.
Yeah.
It was Musharraf, democratically elected, sometime I didn't hear about.
And they're starting to negotiate with Syria because this whole thing has been such a disaster. We'll be back with the liberal agenda and more 51 past the hour on Air America Radio.
You work hard, and you put in extra hours at the office, but you're not getting ahead in your career. Well, here's an idea. Maybe the best place to put in extra hours isn't at work. Instead, try earning your college degree via the Internet at University of Phoenix Online. A college degree continues to provide greater opportunity, responsibility, and reward. And by working just 15 to 20 hours a week at University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree in just 2 to 3 years. At University of Phoenix Online, we offer bachelor's and master's degree programs in business, management, accounting, marketing, IT, healthcare, criminal justice, education, nursing, and more. The fact is, it's better to spend a few years working on your college degree than to spend a lifetime working without it. Before you know it, you'll have the expertise and credentials you need to excel in your field. Call University of Phoenix Online today at 1-800-624-1890. That's 1-800-624-1890.
We wanted to do this really cool promo for Stephen Lynch, comedian, songwriter, uber genius, and play a little of his music for you. But unfortunately, this is all we can give you without offending somebody. So if you'd like to hear the uncensored version, you can catch him September 28th as he debuts his new DVD live at the El Rey, live in our studios. Stephen Lynch, offensively on Sirius Raw Dog 147. Comedy. Uncensored.
Black people, a stroke doesn't care about your money or status. Know that it could be a stroke if suddenly you have problems speaking or seeing. Maybe one side is numb or weak. If any of these occur, act immediately. Call 911. This is Kelly Price.
Blacks have a higher occurrence of stroke. Why is that? Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost. A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
The Consultant Pharmacist is your own personal health care consultant. You'll find them in nursing homes, other long-term care settings, and in your community. Anywhere there's a need for high-level medication management. But Consultant Pharmacy is more than just managing medications. It's about helping people live better and longer lives. This message brought to you by the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. TV personality Luke Perry.
All right, I got a little pop quiz for you. It's about me. What was my zip code? What city was it in? Name three kids I hung out with in the lunchroom. Name three kids your child hangs out with in the lunchroom.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school and know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
You know what's amazing, Riley?
Tell me.
Let me first tell the people out there, this is Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maris, my friend Mark Riley.
Tell me.
Got Kalo on the board.
Kalo!
Got Smarty Pants Larson and Brendan P.W. McDonald in the booth. Dan Pashman, out in the world doing some business.
That's right.
And Ramon, I said on his way, he wanted $75. You know, I don't want. He said he's going to do it with
$75.
He's going to check in. He said. So yeah. So it's good, man. He's cleaning up. You know, what I mean, I think that you know people with drug problems should try to. Have the courage to.
You sure he's not going to spend it on methadone or something?
Look, you know, I know he didn't look good, but it comes to a point where you just got to say, hey, you know, I got to detach from this money and just give it to him because he's done such great work for us. You know?
He has. He's done some really fine work, and inexplicably, apparently, the president thinks so too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he said he's met Bush a couple of times, and that he can't talk about that. You know. But we've got next hour, hopefully we'll get into this Porter Goss thing. Porter Goss, who, this is just unbelievable. He's the nominee, I guess you would call him, for the CIA.
Yes.
The head of the CIA.
Yes, from Florida, congressman from Florida.
And here's his big concession, he said yesterday, representative, he said that some pre-war statements by senior Bush administration officials might well have overstated available intelligence about the threat posed by Iraq.
Mm.
Overstated available intelligence. How about fabricated, lied,
stories?
Yeah, I mean, what happened to that? I mean, what is with this language? It's just unbelievable.
Porter Goss was the head of the House Intelligence Committee when he was in Congress.
But it's just unbelievable the list of lies and BS that you know dragged this country into a unilateral invasion of Iraq is just unbelievable.
And Goss is now saying, "Look, I was a sucker." You know, I believed it. I bought it. He has that. Remember something, that these intelligence committees have access to intelligence that many of their colleagues in Congress do not get.
So I guess that they're trying to make us all think that they really did believe it. And I guess we have to assume that's true. I just, you know, what fascinates me is how many people are just blindly, following Bush and won't even, listen. They literally will see something like a Kerry speech as some sort of spin. Like they almost look at Kerry like this weird fictional being that exists in the liberal world of conspiracies. It's like it's baffling to me the price they're all going to pay in hell for being so filled with denial and delusion. Here we go. Here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. One, praise 60 Minutes for encouraging promising new fiction writers. Two, criticize Kerry's appearance on Letterman. Way too much humor. There's a famine in the Sudan, you know. Three, praise Madonna's pilgrimage to Israel for illustrating the beauty and profundity of celebrity hobby religions. Four, praise Macaulay Culkin's arrests for illustrating the beauty and profundity of celebrity drug experimentation. And five, today's phrase is drop it into conversation. Quote, of course the 60-minute memos were fake, and the Republicans fell right into our trap.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, you on the phones, the liberal confessional. We examine Kerry's health care proposals with an expert, all for you, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Let's be blunt about marijuana. Did you know, as many kids do, that blunt is street slang for a hollowed-out cigar filled with marijuana? Sometimes blunts contain marijuana mixed with cocaine, crack, PCP, methamphetamine, even embalming fluid. How's that for a reality check? Learn to have a blunt talk with your kids about drugs. Call 1-800-729-6686 for a free copy of Keeping America's Youth Drug-Free.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. Where do you go? When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Where do you go?
Ben.
I am the Edison photograph. To delight those who would have melody on.
Now, Sirius Satellite Fresh. It's on.
There This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President Bush is in the Big Apple preparing for an appearance before the United Nations after a successful fundraiser at a local New York hotel last night. President told the crowd last night that he loves New York, but not all New Yorkers feel the same way about him, particularly the Democrats, who held their own fundraiser for John Kerry one block away from where the president appeared. Both events were deemed successful for their respective parties. Meanwhile, federal authorities and local New York police are hoping to be successful in capturing a deranged upstate man who they believe is on a personal mission to take the life of President Bush. Feds, along with the President's Secret Service, say they have uncovered credible evidence that 59-year-old Lawrence Ward of Bainbridge, New York, is a would-be assassin. Surveillance around the city has been extra tight. Ward is reportedly armed with a hunting rifle in the back of his car and told his neighbors upstate that he does not intend to return. Ward's former wife also told police she believes her ex-husband is extremely dangerous. John Kerry ripped into the president yesterday, again criticizing his decisions for war in Iraq and charging he has no plan to contain the escalating violence in the country. Kerry said Bush had no business going after Saddam Hussein in spite of his record of being an abusive leader.
Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator who deserves his own special place in hell. But that was not, in and of itself, a reason to go to war. The satisfaction that we take in his downfall does not hide this fact. We have traded a dictator for a chaos that has left America less secure.
Kerry's latest attack on Bush received an enthusiastic response, as just heard from supporters who believe the tide is turning in the Democratic candidate's favor in the remaining weeks before the general election. Kerry stepped up his attacks amid reports the White House may be changing its approach on Iraq. And with respect to that, an Ohio newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch, is reporting the Bush is all American. Late in January, sudden shift in policy would be a departure from the Bush administration's stance that it would never cut and run. Such a move will also cut short the dreams of neoconservatives of building a democracy in the Arab world. Word of the possible sea change in administration policy comes from veteran White House journalist Robert Novak. Sources have told him that the true pullout will be the next course of action because whoever wins the American presidential election will hear from the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff that the U.S. military forces are much too small to wage an effective campaign in Iraq. Irony in all this, according to Novak, is the belief that if John Kerry were to win in November, his supporters with foreign policy experience believe the same thing, too. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
I have a Pontiac Grand Am.
Oh.
I started getting this noise. I guess it would be a combination of a flute and a bass drum.
Perfect harmony. Car Talk. Weekends at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern on NPR Now 106. And noon on Sirius NPR Talk 107.
This is Earth and Sky. Many of you have asked if it's a coincidence that the moon keeps a single face toward Earth.
And no, it's not thought to be just a coincidence. The constant pull of Earth's gravity has slowed down the spinning moon, so now it's in what's called synchronous rotation. In other words, the moon spins once for each of its orbits around Earth, and that's why the moon always keeps a single face turned our way.
Billions of years ago, the moon was spinning faster than it does today, and it was also much closer to Earth. But the Earth's gravity put the brakes on the moon and gradually increased its distance. This happened because Earth pulls one side of the moon more strongly than the other side, and the moon does the same to Earth. Both worlds attempt to stretch each other from the shape of a sphere into more of an egg shape. We see this tidal effect strongly in ocean tides. But the Earth and Moon also raise tides of solid ground on each other.
Because their tidal bulges don't line up exactly between the center of Earth and the Moon, the rotation rates of both worlds have slowed down over time. Now the Moon is locked with one face perpetually turned toward Earth, and the Moon is getting farther away from the Earth at about a foot or 30 centimeters per year.
For more about this topic, come to EarthSky.org. With thanks to the National Science Foundation, we're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
A pop quiz for parents.
with third grade teacher, Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. 6. Name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Yeah, good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings, working class heroes, guys who with blonde hair highlights, graphic artists.
Can I say one?
Poets, readers of tarot cards, and followers of the Kabbalah. Detached from Judaism. What are you thinking? You think you can just do that and there's not going to be a price to pay? Come on. Come on.
Uh-oh.
Not even religious and it aggravates me. Madonna has no right to practice Kabbalah. That's only for people who put the work in. If she's going to practice Kabbalah, I want her to shave her head, put on a wig, marry a guy that's got payas, and have 27 children. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? If she really wants to switch, make the switch. But religion is not something you try on. That's like yoga. Yoga's fine. You want to disconnect yoga from, you know, the mystical practices where it was rooted in, whatever the hell that is. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But to take the Kabbalah, isolate it, you know, and follow some, you know, renegade, you know, reform rabbi who has decided that he's got a racket going by taking the cryptic chart of the Kabbalah and making it appealing and vaguely understandable to narcissistic people with too much free time on their hands. It's just wrong. You know what I mean? It's just wrong. I reach out to Madonna and Britney Spears and, you know, whatever other, you know, sort of delusional alpha women freak jobs are out there with their, you know, narcissistic, you know, spiritual voids to, you know, cut off all your hair, put on the wig, convert properly, do a mikveh, do the whole business, marry an Orthodox man, a Hasidic man, have 27 to 30.
Yeah.
In the Hasidic community, if she can still do it for however long that she can do it,
She's never too old.
It is time. It's about turning out more Hasidim.
Right.
You know, keeping the numbers high.
And then you have to get one of those 15-bedroom homes somewhere. She can afford that, though.
Well, I'm sure if she did all the things that I prescribed her to do, that Williamsburg would gladly open up their arms and say, we will provide a place for you.
Brittany, too?
Esther. Brittany's got a longer road to get there. But I think Madonna's right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, Britney tries on marriages, apparently, you know, like Madonna tries on religions. What are you going to do? This is America. That's what people do.
I know. They search. They look. You know, they try to fill their hole. You know what I mean? The hole inside of them. You know, preferably, you know, with me, I've talked about before, I don't have a very concrete idea of spirituality or God, but, you know, I'm not without belief right now. Like, I just ate half of a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich on a sourdough roll. And I believed in it deeply, you know, when I began eating it. And you know what? I was satisfied. And I have faith that if I eat that again, I will again feel as satisfied as I do right now, Mark Riley. And granted, that's transient. It'll go away. It's not a belief that'll stay with me. But I know it's just around the corner. The real question comes when you know, I've had three or four of these, and I've really grown to rely on them. You know, what happens when I'm out of town?
You're addicted.
And I've got to settle for some, you know, from a
something less than
bacon and egg sandwich. And I think this is turkey bacon. And
yeah, I know it kind of smelled like real bacon when I walked in.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do that now. They're able to make turkey smell
like
pigs.
Real.
That's how bad it's gotten. And so that's why some of our vegetarian friends are right, that you know, they actually go to a lot of effort to, like, some of the turkeys actually believe they're pigs. And pigs are much more intelligent than turkeys, apparently. And this is delusional on behalf of the turkeys. This is not unlike the Republican Party and the people that follow their party. They've got, you know, a smart pig in the main seat and a bunch of turkeys that think they're pigs following them.
This sounds an awful lot like Animal Farm. This sounds like George Orwell you're starting.
Oh, maybe you're right.
That's okay.
I need to talk about, apparently Saddam Hussein was in the news today. He's
begging for forgiveness or begging for something.
Well, what has happened is he has been diagnosed with, he was begging for forgiveness. He said he meant well, but...
didn't mean to kill all those people, but what the hell?
Yeah, he's asking for mercy, you know, and he said that his regime had been, quote, working for the general good, and they didn't aim to harm.
They just aimed.
But, you know, these are symptoms, apparently, of something called DTSD, which is a deposed tyrant stress disorder. I mean, these is a collection of syndromes, and he's exhibiting all of them. One of them is writing maudlin poetry with a complete disregard for meter or rhyme, which it was revealed he was doing a couple of months ago. Calling up relatives of people he tortured to apologize, another sad symptom. Overuse of the phrase, hey, I was kidding, and can't people take a joke? That carpal tunnel in the celebratory trigger finger, apparently he also has that, like, you know, when he's doing...
Oh, it won't stop twitching.
Slovenly appearance, low beard maintenance, haphazard fashion choices. See, this is something cats do as well when they're on the way out. Nightmares about George Bush 1, George Bush 2, and weirdly the Bush twins, which apparently Hussein's been experiencing. Giant statue separation anxiety, which is actually a subcategory of deposed tyrant stress disorder. And depression over not seeing a giant grinning portrait of yourself on every street corner. That's got to hurt. You know, that's just the sort of the panic of not seeing yourself looking at you,
you know,
from every corner, from every building.
I have to tell you, that is the most ridiculous. You want to talk about, George W. Bush wants to talk about dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
You can go, Mark Maron, all over this world, particularly in some parts of sub-Saharan Africa, I hate to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you go places and all you see are pictures of whoever the strong man is.
Yeah, and all I'm asking for is a few billboards around New York for our show.
Right.
Is that so wrong? Now, if I were to say, like, I would like 5,000 billboards of Mark Riley and Mark Maron on every corner of this city, you want to know why? Because I am the king.
There
and that
go.
Would be weird.
That would be weird.
That would be Stern.
But you know what?
Yeah.
What's Stern?
Yeah, Howard Stern.
No, yeah.
He doesn't put billboards.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't need to.
Anymore. He's the king of all, whatever. But the interesting thing about that kind of egotism,
yeah,
is the only way I can describe, is that, you know, you go certain places. I've been to certain countries,
mm-hmm,
where it's not just a picture of the person, but they're always spouting these little cliches. You know, like, work is good for the blank people. Or, you know, strive and you will succeed. In other words, they always have a little, what do they call those things in comics?
Oh, the balloon.
Yeah, the
balloon. Talk balloon.
They always got a little balloon saying something that they seem to believe is somehow profound, but
yeah,
it really means, I'm in charge, you stick your head up, I'm going to blow it off.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that type of narcissism that you're talking about is only really evident in dictators and celebrities, movie stars. You know, that's where you can see both of that, because if a movie star is in the top 10 movie stars, they, you know, at least 2 or 3 times a year can go out into the world and see pictures of themselves everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, for
true.
A few weeks.
Did you watch the Emmys the other night?
Do you know what time I get up? I mean, what were you doing watching the Emmys?
I don't watch award shows.
Someone told me that my Sprint commercial was on twice during the Emmys, so that, of course, you know, led me into a frenzied panic today, because I haven't seen a check in weeks, you know, and I've never done a commercial, so I don't know what to expect, so I'm on the phone with my manager going, you know, if I'm gonna be out there doing this, you know, people are asking me, like, you know, is that good exposure? It's like, dude, it's a commercial. Maybe it's a good exposure. I mean, you know, it's like it came out of nowhere, and I'm looking forward to having a little extra money to build my garden and tend it someday.
But you know what? They run commercials for a reason.
Are we taking
a lot? You know?
I'm curious to see what, I have no idea what to expect.
And then next thing you know, some kid is going to be walking down the streets here in New York. They're going to see you and they're going, that's the guy in the, that's the soccer guy.
No, I hope that doesn't happen. I never wanted to be that guy. It's the weirdest thing to me that, you know, out of all the people that I know that I would have a national commercial on, because it was just completely not something I was planning on doing. But because of the way it came about, I was like, really? You're just going to give it to me? All right, I'll give it a try, and I have a Sprint phone, and you know what? Honestly, I've been sort of loyal to Sprint for reasons beyond me, because everybody says Sprint sucks, and it doesn't suck any more than any other company sucks. You know, everybody, you talk
I'm
to
beginning
anybody,
to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's cell phone sucks. It's like, what do you have? I have, what's another one?
Singular,
that
T-Mobile.
Sucks.
T-Mobile
sucks.
No, they buy T-Mobile because they see Catherine Zeta-Jones doing the advertisements.
And people are buying Sprint because they see, isn't that guy who's on the thing? And, what's his name? I thought I knew him.
Al Franken? No.
Oh, we'll be, yeah, I got him. Buy my book. Dead air on the Sundance channel. I'm a little too nasal. I'm going to try and bring it down.
I'm sorry,
Passman, son of Lewis and Linda Passman of New Jersey is looking at me. He's like, don't ever say that you're not doing it well, because it doesn't matter. You know, but it matters to me, Passman. All right, so quit looking at me like that. We'll be back in a second on Air America Radio.
Want to turn your car into a stealth fighter? Invisible to all types of speed detection equipment, including radar and laser? Well, now you can with Phaser. With a range of up to 3 miles, the Phaser guarantees that you will avoid all types of speed traps. In fact, the manufacturer will even pay your fine if you get a ticket. More than a mere radar detector. The Phaser works by bouncing a mixture of radar signals and invisible infrared pulses to confuse the computer inside the radar or laser gun. The Phaser is the ultimate way to avoid costly speeding tickets. In fact, it is been made illegal in some states, so call now for details. Remember, the Phaser is guaranteed or your speeding ticket is paid. So if you never want to worry about hearing this again, go stealth and get the Phaser today.
To order risk-free, call now 866-794-6495. That's 866-794-6495. Call 866-794-6495.
Not available in California, Minnesota, Nebraska, Virginia, Oklahoma, or Washington, D.C. Certain restrictions apply to guarantee. Call for details.
We wanted to do this really cool promo for Stephen Lynch, comedian, songwriter, uber genius, and play a little of his music for you. But unfortunately, this is all we can give you without offending somebody. So if you'd like to hear the uncensored version, you can catch him September 28th as he debuts his new DVD live at the El Rey, live in our studios. Stephen Lynch, offensively on Sirius Raw Dog 147. Comedy. Uncensored.
Want to get your child fired up about playing a sport? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. My wife taught me that it's not a good idea to push your kids into sports. Instead, do things to get them interested. Take them to a tennis match or a baseball game. Then, give them a book or magazine on the sport. Maybe even check out a video from the library. Get excited about the sport yourself. And let them enjoy the overall experience. For ideas on how to keep your kids motivated once they do get involved with sports, go to FamilyMinute.net for a free information sheet. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. If you'd like to get today's Family Minute offer, visit our website, FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or give us a call at 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Everyone knows what happens when we join together. We get stronger. That's why community groups like the PTA, clubs, and even faith groups can do so much for our community, especially fighting to keep kids away from drugs. But do you know there's a way to make community groups even stronger? It's called a community coalition. A community coalition helps local groups get together and fight to keep kids away from drugs. Find out how your group can get involved at helpyourcommunity.org, because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Wow, Stevie Ray Vaughan was almost like too good. You know what I mean? You listen to her, you're like, wow, you can't be that good a guitar player. Is that allowed? Like, I can't even listen to him, you know, for very long, because I'm like, it's too good. It's like too damn good.
You know what it's like?
What?
It's like a cat that, you know, falls off a high place and always lands on their feet.
Right.
Charlie Parker had the same genius.
Yeah, you're just too damn good, and you can only listen to it a little bit. It's a weird thing with genius, you know? I mean, and like the guy yesterday, I was talking about playing the blues, and I said, anyone can do it? Anyone can do it. And he said, well, yeah, tell Stevie Ray Vaughan that or whatever. It's like, well, Stevie Ray Vaughan did it great, but the reason I said the blues got tired is because, you know, anybody, you could go to Florida, you can go to New Orleans, you can go down to anywhere where they have those sort of like, you know, retooled urban areas that used to be really horrendous areas, and they remake them and they open 15 blues bars, and you can walk down the street and hear literally, you know, three or four or five or six middle-aged, you know, freaks just sitting in a guitar wrenching away on their Stratocaster with pretty reasonable blues sound. You know, it's the type of music it is. And, you know, I'm not saying that's bad, but it's sort of like any other music. Like, eventually it all starts to sound the same if too many people play the same thing. And I'm losing whatever. You know what I mean?
No, you're not. No, you're not.
What I'm saying is the great thing about genius, any kind of genius, what defines genius for me is if you go back to their work at any different point in your life, it takes on a whole new meaning. It takes, you know, any time, what I consider to be genius is when you go, like, if whether it's an author or a piece of music like Hendrix or William Burroughs or whoever you consider a genius, what makes it a genius to me is if you say, God, I haven't listened to that in a while, or I haven't read that in like 4 years, and you read it and you're like, oh my God, I had no idea this is what it was about. That's a genius. And speaking of, you know, latent geniuses, the genius of my unconscious, which, you know, I don't take responsibility for. Here is my dream diary from last night. I wake up naked in a pool of warm orange goo. I'm in an all-white circular room. Somewhere Amy Grant is singing. A purple fluid light sensor floods my eyeballs in a pulsing silver orb that begins speaking. Good morning, Mark, 6-9. Today is Tuesday, September 21st, 2036. You've been asleep for 32 years of glorious conservative government. My name is Condi. I'm here to assist you. I rub my eyes. So many questions. 2036, conservative, Mark 6-9. All I could spit out was, where am I? Condi says, at the Bush Center for the Pacification of Dangerous Urges in the Northeast Sector. You were put to sleep by our operatives after the 2004 election. You were far too dangerous to remain awake. So wait, why am I called Mark 6-9? Condi says, everyone's named after Bible verses now. I say, but what does Mark 6-9 say? Condi says, but be shod with sandals and not put on two coats. I say, I don't get it. Condi says, this is why we put you to sleep, Mark 6-9. And she zaps a short, incredibly painful current shot right through my nads. While I was screaming, a machine that looks like an aluminum stalk of celery blew all the orange goo off me and dressed me in a red plaid suit, a white belt, and white shoes. Condi says, now that you are properly dressed, you will be reprogrammed to serve the interests of your wealthy masters. Pray to our white Christian God and consume a certain allotment of prepackaged goods, services, and entertainment. I say, yeah, right. Good luck with that. And I start clawing at my eyes and shrieking like a little girl. Connie gave me a sad little laugh. Once the liquid nanoblocker fuses into your spinal fluid, these outbursts will stop. Besides, rebellion was outlawed after we assumed complete control at the end of the Second Civil War. Now, why don't you take a little nap, and when you wake up, you can join the mandatory National Bible Study. Sleep well, Mark 6-9. Purple fluid washes my eyeballs, and TV images appear. First it's Bible sports, then faith-based Bible weather, then George W. Bush with his arm around Jesus, giving us a thumbs up. Must escape. Must not fall asleep. Must not... I woke up, and my bed was filled with aluminum sulfate.
Mark 6-9.
That's me, man.
That's the year I graduated high school.
Wow, that's the year my brother was born. Coincidence?
I don't think
you
so.
You be the judge.
By the way, that was also the year that Lewis and Linda Pashman were married.
Wow, it's all adding up.
Yep.
And that was only 6 years after I was born. And if you put three sixes together, it's 666. What does it mean, Riley? All right.
Okay.
Sorry, buddy.
That's all right.
Let's listen to John Kerry.
Well,
let's kick some Kerry.
Yeah, John Kerry is ramping up his criticism of the Bush administration. He was here in New York. He was on David Letterman. He gave a speech, a 47-minute speech at NYU, my alma mater. I have to keep saying that.
That's all right.
And, you know, he is ramping it up. He is sharpening his focus. Mark, we've seen this now taking place over the last week or so. He is taking the initiative away from the Republicans in terms of defining him, because that's what the Republicans are really good at, defining their opposition.
You know what I wish he would do? And I know all of a sudden people are like, oh, man, what now? More whining, criticism? What are you going to judge him? I wish sometimes he sounds like he's actually giving advice to the president.
You know what I mean?
Like, the president ought to, the president should. I think it's time to just say, if I were president,
I would
give them advice. That, you know, you're running for office. You're not a senator now. You're a candidate.
I heard a little bit of that.
That's all I'm saying.
Last night on Letterman. I mean, he kind of
went
into
got personable.
Oops.
It was great.
But here
that is
he
the
is
heaviest
at NYU.
Pen.
Yeah, right.
Did you hear that? You probably heard that at home, like the clunky. That wasn't him. That wasn't Mark Reilly hitting his mics, and that was actually this 10-pound pen that he writes with hitting the floor.
Yeah. But it's a big pen, and it glows in the dark.
That was a gift from you, it's very nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. Now, let's hear John Kerry at NYU and hear how he really is sharpening his focus and sharpening his attack on the
Bush administration. It was great because it wasn't defensive.
Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator who deserves his own special place in hell. But that was not in and of itself a reason to go to war. The satisfaction that we take in his downfall does not hide this fact. We have traded a dictator for a chaos that has left America less secure. Now, the president has said that he miscalculated in Iraq and that it was a catastrophic success. In fact, the president has made a series of catastrophic decisions from the beginning in Iraq. At every fork in the road, he has taken the wrong turn and he has led us in the wrong direction. The first and most fundamental mistake was the president's failure to tell the truth to the American people. He failed to tell the truth about the rationale for going to war, and he failed to tell the truth about the burden this war would impose on our soldiers and our citizens. By one count, the president offered 23 different rationales for this war. If his purpose was to confuse and mislead the American people, he succeeded. His two main rationales, weapons of mass destruction and the Al-Qaeda September 11th connection, have both been proved false by the president's own weapons inspectors and by the 9/11 Commission. And just last week, Secretary of State Powell acknowledged those facts. Only Vice President Cheney still insists that the earth is flat.
So let me just try and condense that. Bush is a liar.
Yes, and Cheney too
is a liar. And yesterday Kerry was talking about how, you know, this war is taking its toll on the American economy, that so much money is going into this disaster that, you know, we're not able to, you know, put money into health care, put money into, you know, a lot of other programs that are necessary to keep Americans, you know, healthy and alive and keep this economy functioning properly. And we're going to talk to a woman after the bottom of the hour here, Jean Lambrew, who is going to explain to us Kerry's health plan. Is that right, Mark?
Absolutely. She's from the Center for American Progress. We've also got Iraq, Birth of a Nation coming up, the Liberal Confessional, which always scares the bejesus out of me, and so much more here on Air America Radio.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning, I'm Wayne Gilman. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice has resurfaced in the shadows of President Bush as he prepares for an appearance before the United Nations. Rice told a published report this morning that Iraqi Prime Minister Iyad Alawi and his new government deserve the support of the international community. Rice described the Iraqi Prime Minister as a brave man who puts his life on the line every day. Rice never once addressed the issue of the rise in the attacks by insurgents other than to acknowledge the increase. John Kerry was also in New York yesterday for an appearance at the New York University, a fundraiser later in the day, and a nighttime appearance on David Letterman. Kerry again slammed President Bush on Iraq, saying he had no business starting war with Saddam Hussein. Kerry acknowledged Hussein was a ruthless dictator but was no threat to the security of the United States. And the search for a deranged New York man continues. The feds believe he will attempt to assassinate President Bush while he's in New York. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Larry, I can't see you anymore.
What?
You don't have a job, a car, and you live in your parents' basement. You're 43.
I'll be 43 next month.
Grow up, Larry.
I have a boat.
Sure you do.
No, really, it's a Larson Senza sport boat. Yeah, that's it, a sport boat. Yeah, yeah, and it's fully loaded with, Sirius.
Win a 2005 Larson Senza sport boat in the Sirius Dog Days of Summer Sweepstakes. For all the rules and how to enter, go to Sirius.com.
Snap. Out of it. And how'd you pay for this? You can't buy a toothbrush. Idiot.
This is Earth and Sky. The venom of a poisonous snake is designed to kill its prey. But a bite can be a lot less lethal when it's treated with an injection of antivenin.
Antivenin is a serum that neutralizes a snake's poison. Most antivenins are too chemically complex to be synthesized in a laboratory. Instead, scientists expose an animal, such as a horse, to small amounts of snake venom. This causes its immune system to create antibodies, cells that attack the venom. The scientists remove some of the animal's blood and separate out the protective antibodies.
Bill Haast is director of the Miami Serpentarium. He produces snake venom for life-saving antivenins by milking poisonous snakes, forcing them to release their venom into a beaker. In 55 years, he says he's handled 3 million poisonous snakes. But snake bites happen, so years ago, Haast began trying to build his own immunity.
I started off in 1948. Taking minute injections of cobra venom and slowly increased it until I was taking a full lethal dose. And I still do. As a matter of fact, I had an injection this morning.
Haast has been bitten 179 times so far. He says the injections have probably saved his life.
Our thanks to the Camille and Henry Dreyfus Foundation, a private foundation dedicated to advancing research and education in the chemical sciences. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Hey, good morning. 33 past the hour. Mark Riley, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
It's Mark Maron here. Morning's Edition is the show on Air America that you're listening to as we speak right now. Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 84. Leaders of Iraq. It's a big morning. How are you? According to reliable sources, incarceration is starting to break down Saddam Hussein. Yes, apparently he has appealed for mercy. He's depressed, broken in spirit, writing bad poetry. The man is a shell. Now, I know you want to shoot him. I know you want to shoot him more than anything, but I've got a radical idea for you. Let him live. That's right. Just let Saddam live. Deposed leaders are a valuable resource to new democracies. They have lots of experience getting things done and usually end up building some really nice libraries and statues of themselves. And they make a great distraction. Whatever problems you might be having, just turn a spotlight on sad old Saddam and boom, instant entertainment. And if you really want to punish Saddam, making him into a regular schlub is the way to go. Make him a busboy. Make him clean toilets at the mosque. Make him do all that crappy stuff you have to do every day. But without the guns. Dead, Saddam's just another corpse. Living, he'll be a fascinating, faded nutcase like Howard Hughes or Judy Garland. Only not as controlling and insecure. So no matter how screwed up your life gets, you can look over at Saddam and say, at least I'm not that guy. Until then, good luck and God bless. This is day 84 of Iraq. Birth of a nation. Live free or die. So, right now, we have a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and an associate professor at George Washington University. Gene Lambrew is on the phone, and we're going to talk about Kerry's health plan. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, can you just, let us play this piece of Kerry's sound for you, and then we'll start our conversation. That'd be all right?
Yep.
Okay, let's hear that, Kayla.
Any case $50,000 or more, you're no longer going to cover in your insurance plans. We pay for them out of a federal fund that will be created. And that federal fund will reduce the premiums for everyone in America.
Okay, so how does this, what he's talking about, fit into his overall health plan? Can you explain it to us?
Sure.
Good.
What the senator was talking about is what's called a premium rebate, which
right.
is to say, we have a few people in this country who unfortunately have the highest costs and really drive up the cost in the system. Today, since most of us get our insurance on the job, we pay for those few unfortunate people. What Senator Kerry would do is say, why don't we have the government pay for this, the same way that they pay when somebody's house is struck by a hurricane. Government will come in, help pay for those costs, help those people out, but also reduce the premiums for all the rest of us.
How does it reduce the premiums for the rest of us? Could you just explain to me? Because I don't even understand my plan.
Yeah. Well,
but
you today probably, with all the other Air America folks, are in an insurance plan, and you pay for each other through your premiums.
Okay. Now, so when I pay a premium yearly,
yes.
that covers, that money goes into a pool that's going to be used to treat anybody else on the plan.
Correct. But
okay.
If one of you happens to have an accident or have a bad disease, it means that the rest of your coworkers pay for you. Is that fair? Kerry would say no. He'd say that's sort of a societal obligation. Why not say, as a society, we'll pay for the sickest people, the lowest income people, and make your premiums more affordable on average by about 10%.
And that stays steady.
For a family.
That stays steady. That's not a fluctuating money.
That, yeah, it
the
would
premium
actually
cost.
Only reduce your premiums at the level, but over time it would make it more predictable. I mean,
and stabilize it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Now, how much would this end up costing? I mean, one of the things President Bush does is hit John Kerry on the cost of the changes he wants to make in America's health system.
Sure. Well, I think that it clearly is a question of priorities. The president would spend about $100 billion and not actually pay for that on his health plan. Kerry would spend about $600 billion over 10 years and offset that by repealing part of the tax cuts for the highest income Americans. Is this an investment worthwhile? Absolutely. It helps low-income Americans afford health insurance. It helps all people afford their private premiums through this premium rebate and makes critical investments in things like making the system more efficient, helping to address chronic diseases, really trying to improve public health.
Now, the other criticism that the president makes is that John Kerry's health care plan would create government oversight, literally, of, you know, what doctors people could see, what health care they would have access to.
You know, that's the same old rhetoric that we hear every time there's a health proposal on the table. The reality is that Kerry's plan builds on the existing public-private system. It really is less radical than the president's plan because it is building on existing options. The president's plan would actually try to move people out of their job-based insurance and the funding for some of the public programs in terms of this increase and let everybody kind of get out there on their own in the individual insurance market to get these high-deductible health plans. The president's plan is actually more radical in its structure than the Kerry plan.
Well, it seems sort of interesting to me that already HMOs, you know, the ones you pay for yourself, you know, are determining whether or not they want to treat you. You know what I mean? That, like, and that's just out of your own personal costs, and the fluctuation in costs within the HMO industry has no bearing. They're private corporations, right? That just can change the cost of the healthcare at a whim, right?
Well, it's true in part, but it's also due to kind of we have a very hands-off approach to how we pay for healthcare in the U.S. Even though the U.S. spends the most in the world on healthcare, as a government, we pay the least share. So we basically say, people are on their own, providers have to care for uninsured people, employers have to bear this cost with very little assistance from the government. If we spread that cost more evenly across society, then we wouldn't have to necessarily rely on these private, you know, HMOs to make a lot of these decisions.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Gene Lambert, we're talking in several cases here about, children's health, in many cases, health of low-income people. What about that great mass in the middle, the people that make between $35,000 and $70,000 a year? Would they pay more or less under Kerry's plan than they're paying now?
They would pay less. The Kerry plan really does try to address not, again, just the low-income people, but middle-income people in three ways. First of all, for those who don't have access to job-based insurance, you work in a small firm, you're unemployed, you're retired, you could have access to the same health plans that members of Congress have. He opens up this congressional health plan to all Americans. Second, if you have middle income and your premiums are a big proportion of your income, the Kerry plan will give you a tax credit to say you won't pay more than a certain percent of your income on health insurance.
Nice.
And I think the third part, again, is this premium rebate, which is going to, by having the government pay for these highest cost cases, reduce everybody's premiums.
That sounds it sounds pretty encouraging. It seems like the more people with health coverage, the less, you know, pain and fear and hate we'll have in the country just in general. So, Gene, will you stay with us and address after the break maybe, you know, how kids fit into the plan and a little more specifics about pharmaceuticals?
Sure, happy to.
Okay, we'll be right back with Gene after this on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Tim Robbins. It's time to wake up with Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
We're fighting for our lives here!
Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, man, turn on 24th and Skelsey's
on. Oh, yeah, I completely forgot. I gotta call Sally. Hello?
Hey, Sally, Vince Skels is on Sirius Disorder 24.
Oh, I know. I got it on. He just played some Tom Waits, then into a Lou Reed tune. It was great. Oh, listen, I got to call him.
Hey, Sally, yeah, I know why you're calling. I've got Vin on right now.
Did you catch that interview with Suzanne Vega?
Vin Skels' Idiot's Delight. Freeform radio at its finest. Turn a friend on. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern on Sirius Disorder 24.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do? Tell other people? Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Stuart, how are those hedges coming, little man?
Dad!
Sorry, you're not little. You're 5. Man, you're holding a 10-horsepower gas hedge trimmer. I should watch myself, huh? So, fire her up and show those hedges who they're messing with.
But I could get hurt.
Don't focus on the negative. Come on, go get him, killer! Ah, that's the battle cry of the lawn warrior. Now, steady the blade! Where are those hedges?
Dad!
Think of the trimmer as an extension of your arm. Come on, keep that arm away from...
The cat!
The cat! Oh, and the neighbor's new car!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Dad, make it stop!
Come back here. You can do the neighbor's shrubs after you finish ours.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Close your eyes.
and imagine you're on an unspoiled beach. Sunlight streaming through the palm leaves. A paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist because the Nature Conservancy works locally to save precious places around the world forever. That way, closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. Help save the last great places. Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Air America Radio. You're listening to the Morning Sedition broadcast. We are talking to...
I like that. Yeah. Good morning. That sounds very BBC.
Broadcasting from New York. Jean Lambrew is on the phone. She's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and an associate professor at George Washington University. We're fleshing out the Carey Health Plan. Now, Jean, what about children? How are they covered in this whole plan?
Well, it's important to start with a little bit of history.
Okay.
Back in 1997, President Clinton, with help from Senator Kerry, passed what's called the Children's Health Insurance Program.
Mm-hmm.
Helped provide care for those children just above the Medicaid low-income program eligibility levels, but who still live in families that can't afford coverage.
Mm-hmm.
That program has been quite a success, and in fact, since the Bush administration has taken hold, there's been about 5.2 million more uninsured Americans. Very bad news, except for the little silver lining, which is none of those people are kids. We really have protected kids during this recent recession, although it's important to note that in Texas and in Florida, where President Bush is from and Governor Bush, the brother, lives and runs the state, there's been significant cutbacks in that program. But we've sort of seen children be protected during this economic downturn.
So what you're saying that in Florida and in Texas, where Jeb Bush runs Florida and Texas is the home state of the Bushes, that they're letting children go without health coverage.
They have reduced their eligibility and cut off about 150,000 to 200,000 children from their public programs.
I had heard about that before, actually, yeah.
And it's a real problem. But, you know, this is not good enough. I mean, even though we have done a good job on kids, Senator Kerry's plan would really go the next step, which is to really shore up the low-income program to make sure that the federal government pays for all those program costs for our poorest children, extend that children's health insurance program up to the next level, and make sure that what happened in Texas and Florida doesn't happen in other states, and really provide some new options for middle-income families to cover children.
Hmm.
Is it realistic of Senator Kerry to pledge to cut the number of uninsured Americans from 45 million down to 27 million, I believe I heard him mm-hmm. say, during his 4 years in office, his first 4 years in office, assuming he wins. Can he do that realistically?
Well, even the conservative American Enterprise Institute agreed with that assessment, that he would get 27 million out of the 45 million uninsured. Yes, it's a plan that builds on what exists, is practical, you know, increases that funding in a responsible way that's offset through these rollbacks of the tax cuts to do it.
Now, who's going to be upset by Kerry's plan? HMOs, doctors, how are they going to react to this?
I'd add the drug industry.
The drug industry, yeah.
You know, you really see, I think, part of the challenge is that you're coming in after 4 years in which HMOs have seen record profits. The drug industry got the bill that was least objectionable to them. And so if Kerry were elected, you would certainly see those industries looking twice at this plan. We've certainly seen in the run-up to this campaign, to the election, that these industries are preferring the president's plan over the Kerry plan.
Let's talk about that, because George Bush is certainly, if he represents anybody or anything, it's corporate America. Now, the pharmaceutical, he overhauled Medicare, or is that what it was?
Yeah.
Medicare. But, what he did was redesign it so the pharmaceutical companies can pretty much dictate their own pricing. Is that true?
Well, he did it in three ways. First of all, the president will not support what's called reimportation, which is allowing U.S.-made drugs that are sold at lower prices in Canada and other countries to be reimported by American pharmacies and American seniors to lower their drug prices. The president has prohibited that. Kerry would say, if done safely to prevent problems and efficiently, that should be done.
But, Jean, the strange upside to that is that a lot more seniors are seeing Canada.
Yeah. Yes, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. It's a new sort of drug
field trip.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, right.
So all in all, go ahead.
It's the number one policy that the drug industry objects to. Second of all, he created this interim discount card for seniors, which really has not done a very good job of enrolling people to help them get temporary price discounts while they're waiting for this drug benefit in 2006. And when you look at that drug benefit in 2006, in addition to having a benefit design with this donut hole gap in the middle of it with fairly high premiums, it really doesn't let Medicare negotiate on behalf of its 41 million beneficiaries for drug prices.
Okay.
Instead, it lets private insurers set those prices. And I think there's a real question about whether or not that's going to work.
And the carry plan will guarantee that there's a stabilization of pharmaceutical prices for the seniors?
It will give the Secretary of Health and Human Services more authority to negotiate prices for Medicare seniors. It will try to increase the drug transparency so we know what drug prices we're paying for. And it really will take the interim steps needed to make drugs more affordable for Americans.
Terrific. Thank you so much for joining us, Jean Lambrew. I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks a lot for making it plain for us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. That was Jean Lambrew, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress and an Associate Professor at George Washington University. It's weird because I get, part of me wants to say Medicaid when I should say Medicare.
Yeah, it's always so confusing. By the way, Carrie's plan would decrease the number of uninsured Americans from 45 down to 27 million. I think Bush's would only actually insure about 6 million of the 45 million that are now uninsured.
So essentially, if you want to be healthier, go with Carrie. We'll be back with your calls if you want to call 866-303-2270. We're also going to do the liberal confessional, and it's 50 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. Want to add your 2 cents? Give us a call at 866-303-2270 and give us your best shot.
This year, you are going to quit smoking. Whether you've said it for years or you're trying for the very first time, there's a revolutionary new system that's guaranteed to help you succeed or your money back. SmokeRx has a 95% success rate, so we guarantee that you'll be completely smoke-free and cravings-free in as little as 1 week. Unlike gums or patches, SmokeRx is a complete system that includes natural herbs to curb your cravings safely without nicotine. Best of all, SmokeRx starts to work immediately. Come on, aren't you willing to give yourself 1 week to quit? We're so confident that SmokeRx will work for you that we're giving away a free month supply with all of today's orders. Whether you're doing it for yourself or for the ones you love, SmokeRx is the fast, guaranteed answer. In as little as 1 week, you'll kick the habit for good or your money back. Call now to receive a free month supply with your order.
To order risk-free, call 1-800-305-2704. That's 1-800-305-2704. Call 1-800-305-2704 now.
We wanted to do this really cool promo for Stephen Lynch, comedian, songwriter, uber genius, and play a little of his music for you. But unfortunately, this is all we can give you without offending somebody. So if you'd like to hear the uncensored version, you can catch him September 28th as he debuts his new DVD live at the El Rey, live in our studios. Stephen Lynch, offensively on Sirius Raw Dog 147. Comedy. Uncensored.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but
what?
But your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What was your name again, Barry?
Johnson.
Barry Johnson.
Yeah.
The U.S. Postal Service wants to remind everyone this year to protect themselves from becoming victims of identity theft. Your personal information is a goldmine for identity thieves. Identity theft is taking key pieces of someone's personal information, such as a name, address, or social security number, in order to impersonate them. For more information, log on to consumer.gov. A message from the U.S. Postal Service.
Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. We're broadcasting from New York City.
Yeah, baby.
Damn! You know, sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. Do you know that, Mark Riley? We all stray from the straight and narrow progressive path from time to time. So when I need to unburden myself, I step into the Morning Seditional Confessional. Bless me, Brother Riley, I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
I have a gun problem.
What kind of gun? A pistol? A rifle?
No, I don't actually own a gun, but I do have this one.
Hold up. That's hardly the same thing.
Yeah, but it's still kind of sick, don't you think? I use it every day on A Rock, Birth of a Nation, and just last week I lined up a bunch of corporate criminals and shot them full of liberal lead like this. Oh, man! I can't stop. Oh, man.
And?
Oh, well, what does that say about me? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I saw Bowling for Columbine. This country does have a serious, you know, effed up gun disease. My God, gun culture made the Terminator governor in California, partly because people thought he was good at blowing stuff up. Innocent kids. That's right. It is true. Innocent kids get killed by guns every day in Iraq, over here, everywhere. And here I am making a joke out of it. You understand what I'm saying? I should be slapped. I'm turning into one of those creepy NRA guys with a dead deer in the back of their truck and a .38 under my pillow. Ow! Yeah!
But did you shoot anyone for real? Is anybody dead now because you pushed that little button of yours?
Hold on. Anyone dead?
Was it funny when you pushed that little button?
Yeah. It's hilarious. How is that not funny?
Are you a comedian?
Yes, I am.
So make me laugh, funny man. Now go and sin no more.
Amen. Let me just try this, the double wham here.
See, now you've gone too far. What goes up must come down.
Bob Novak, catch. Look at Jim Rowan there going, I'm a vegetarian and I don't agree with this type of humor.
Yeah.
Everybody's meat. You understand? You know, anybody is meat. Robert Novak's meat. Why kill the meat? Someone might eat Robert Novak and get some sort of horrendous cancer.
Oh, my God.
Let's talk to this guy. Is he going to ask a question I can understand?
Wait.
Beth? Oh, it's a woman. Beth in Manhattan. How are you, Beth?
Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Hello.
I used to work for a pharmaceutical company, though I don't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make sure everybody realizes when we re-import drugs from other places, we're not re-importing drugs that are magically cheaper there. We're re-importing their price controls because our government doesn't have the guts to set its own prices like everybody else does.
Well, that's because our government is owned by the pharmaceutical companies, right?
No, it's owned by a bunch of people who believe in capitalism, meaning you shouldn't have price supports, you shouldn't have price controls.
But the pharmaceutical company is a very powerful lobby, right?
Oh, yes. No, I'm just saying that unless we're willing to buckle down and really deal with the fact that we want to control the prices on these things and we need to negotiate them together.
By saying things like, hey, haven't you guys made enough money?
Look, I got three words. Baby boom generation.
Mm-hmm.
When the baby boomers start needing these 10 buck a pop medications, they'll cost $5 eventually because the baby boomers will see to it. When you're staring your own mortality in the face,
mm-hmm.
nothing is going to stand in the way of you getting a hold of the drugs you need.
No, I hear you. Are we taking another call? Where are we time-wise? No, that's it. We got to go.
We got another.
Hold on.
Wait a minute. Says who?
Bob Novak. Catch.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, the Presidential Daily Briefing, Sidney Blumenthal from Salon.com, the President's Palm Pilot, the Liberal Agenda, you on the phones, and more here on Air America Radio.
My dad can throw a baseball 100 million feet.
Yeah, well, my dad can throw a football 1,000 bazillion feet. That's twice as far.
So, my dad can hold his breath underwater for 5 minutes.
That's nothing. My dad can make a 360 two-handed backward slam dunk with his eyes closed.
Yeah, well, my dad, he can make quarters
come out of his nose. Big deal. My dad can eat a whole jalapeno pepper in one bite.
Get out.
Yep, that's impossible. He'd explode. Boom!
Kids who spend time with their fathers are less likely to get in trouble or fail in school. Be there for your kids. Give them someone to brag about. Remember, it takes a man to be a dad.
My dad can crush a soda can with his head.
No way.
I saw him do it.
Cool.
Then we took him to the hospital.
Call 1-800-790-DADS for more information. A public service message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
Old way.
And hearing a great deal about frequency modulation. The new high fidelity.
New way.
Superior sound resolution with S-Plex technology. Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice is in tow with President Bush's entourage as he prepares for an appearance in a couple of hours before the United Nations General Assembly. Rice has been keeping a low profile in recent weeks, but met with the editorial staff of the New York Post yesterday, where she told them the administration should be getting greater credit for its work in Iraq. Rice also defended the interim government of Iraq, headed by Prime Minister Iyad Alawi. Rice says the Prime Minister is putting his life on the line every day as Iraq undergoes a radical change towards sovereignty. Rice said it was unfair for Alawi to continue to weather criticism about Iraq's future as being hopeless. She said it was not fair to him or the Iraqi people. Rice says Iraqis are being underestimated like the South Africans were a decade ago or the Americans in 1776. Never once did the National Security Advisor ever outline a plan to contain the escalating insurgency in Iraq. Rice did acknowledge the rise in violence there. Security in around New York City is extremely tight this morning as President Bush and rival candidate John Kerry remain in the Big Apple. Law enforcement, however, is focused on the appearances of President Bush, who they believe is marked for an assassination attempt by a deranged man from upstate New York. The Fed's Secret Service and local police say they have credible evidence that the suspect Lawrence Ward is a would-be assassin. Law enforcement is not leaving anything to chance as the search is on for the gunman. John Kerry's recent spate of attacks on President Bush's handling of the crisis in Iraq appears to be paying off in the polls. A Quinnipiac University survey says there are more voters who support candidate Kerry and more voters who are voting for Kerry because they dislike Bush. Pollster added that Bush voters only appear to want to vote for Bush and Bush only. All this as the race continues to tighten up and most swing states at a dead even. Kerry continued his blistering criticism of the president and the White House for his handling of the crisis in Iraq. Yesterday, Kerry brought his campaign to NYU, virtually preaching to the choir about the president's alleged frailties on Middle Eastern foreign policy.
I saw firsthand what happens when pride or arrogance take over from rational decision-making. And after serving in a war, I returned home to offer my own personal views of dissent. I did so because I believed strongly that we owed it to those risking their lives to speak truth to power.
John Kerry on a campaign trail in New York University yesterday. In other stories making headlines, in a rare media moment, CBS News and veteran journalist Dan Rather apologized for what they called a mistake in judgment in their controversial story questioning the military record of President George W. Bush. Rather, in his apology, said the network was misled by the source of bogus documents that many experts determined were in fact fake. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
I have a Pontiac Grand Am.
Oh.
I started getting this noise. I guess it would be a combination of a flute and a bass drum.
Perfect harmony. Car Talk. Weekends at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern on NPR Now 106. And noon on Sirius NPR Talk 107.
This is Earth and Sky. Sarah Sines in Sunrise, Florida, wants to know about dieting and our bodies.
She writes, for every pound we're overweight, our bodies grow 200 miles of new capillaries. What happens to those capillaries when we lose weight?
Sarah, it's true, your body grows 200 miles, more than 300 kilometers of new capillaries for each added pound of weight. Capillaries are tiny blood vessels. They're so tiny that they only allow one blood cell to move freely through them at a time. Capillaries pass nutrients to our cells and pick up wastes. When a person gains a few pounds of fat tissue, that tissue needs a supply of blood to survive, and that's why you grow the new network of tiny blood vessels.
Typically, as you lose weight, the existing fatty cells just shrink and wait for a chance to grow again. That's why it can be so hard to shed weight. But through persistent dieting and exercise, the fat tissue can be reabsorbed into the body. To answer your question, Sarah, the cells of the capillaries can also be broken down.
So the vast network of tiny capillaries can slowly recede along with your receding waistline. We have links to more about this process at our website, earthsky.org. Thanks for your question, Sarah. And with thanks to the National Science Foundation, I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky.
Growing up on a farm out here, I just thought life was great. I had my own horse. I drove a tractor with my dad. For me, I thought farm life was the American dream. Hi, my name is Rex Phipps. That all changed when I was reminded how dangerous working on a farm can be. My cousin was almost killed in a terrible accident. I had to do something. I couldn't help my cousin, but I could help other people avoid this on their farms. So I volunteered at farm safety day camps for children of all ages, teaching kids about being safe around tractors, tools, and animals. Just like I found a need to fill in my community, your community needs you. Find out how you can help in your hometown. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
And it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, tarot card readers, people who scry, graphic artists, men with blonde highlights. You might want to rethink that. Those who just aren't able to get out and get to the gym, but your heart's in it and you've spent $650 on your membership. I've paid that price. I've had the guilt card in my wallet with my picture on it, all starry-eyed, ready to change my life. Do you remember those where you used to get an ID for the gym that actually had your picture on it that day? You're like, you hit bottom and you're like, man, this is it. From here on out, everything changes.
Yeah.
And you go to the gym and you drop your $700, which is a deal somehow. They really screw you at those gyms. It's unbelievable. I was just starting to think about it yesterday because I got a gym to, a membership to the place right around the corner from me in New York Health Club or whatever. What is it? New York City. What's the one right down here?
What?
The New York
Sports
Health
Club.
Sports Club.
Oh, New York Sports Club. Yeah, yeah.
Like they deserve the plug. But I just realized, you know, it's not a bad facility, but I drop all this dough and you break it down in your head when you're getting a membership. Like, you know, I'm going to use it. Oh, of course this is worth it because I'm going to be running every day. I'm going to be up here using the steam room. I'm going to be up here using the machines. And I went twice last month. You know how much those two visits cost me? About $100. $100 a visit. And I started to think, was it really worth it? Well, you get to use towels. They have towels there. So that's like, that's worth $90, right?
That's a lot of steam, man. I'll tell you that.
It's ridiculous, the little cards. Like, look at me all starry-eyed and hopeful.
I got a high-tech thing that they do with the health club I go to. I don't have my picture on my card, but when I run my card through the slider, my picture comes up on a computer.
Yeah, I used to have one of those.
Yeah, it tells you when the last time you went and makes you feel real guilty.
When I was when I was a crunchy, I used to have one of those. I just can't deal, you know, it's like, and there's some part of me that honestly believes that, you know, if I just set my mind to it, you know, I'm only weeks away from a six pack and, you know, huge show. Like, well, but what difference should that even make to me? I'm almost old. My birthday is next week.
Mine's tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. It's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Hold on a minute.
I'm not telling anybody.
I got to write this on my hand. Get Riley something.
Give me a KO.
Don't show up tomorrow without at least a Hallmark card saying, sorry, you're old, buddy.
Take load, pal.
I'm catching up with you, though, man.
Hey, man.
Are we going to be honest?
It's, huh?
How old are you going to be?
53.
Wow.
It's a wonderful life.
I'm going to be 41, but tell me I don't look a day over 38. Am I right?
You're
38, right?
39, maybe.
And in a healthy 30. I'm vital. I'm a cat owner. There's a lot of pluses. I'm married, and I have a very beautiful wife who's coming on Thursday. Maybe she'll be bringing some ants with her.
Uh-oh.
She should bring some ants with her in her suitcase. If you weren't listening at the 6 o'clock hour, you're not going to know what I'm talking about. But I don't want to bring it up now out of fear that my wife may be listening.
Wait a minute. Now, are these ants, I guess, are resistant to those little traps? You know those things they sell in the stores?
That's like mild heroin to ants. It's like one generation you'll kill. The next generation's like, this is good. You got any more of this?
Yeah.
Bring it on. What do you got?
So you go
through the trap cycle, and then that's over. But it was just out of control when I was home last. It was like, you know, it was like the movie Frogs. It was like, you know, nature is going to swallow up my entire house, man. And I'm constantly fascinated with the ants. But she's just really not engaged. She's not called the exterminator, and I don't know why. And I'm not there, so on some level, I'm like, well, I don't care. If you want to have ants crawling all over everything every day you wake up, that's fine, because I'm not there that often. But when I do get home, I'd rather not be covered by ants. And now, apparently, she's going to take some action, which is good. What else did I want to talk about? I was going to talk about something else, and we got off on this gym thing.
Well, the gym thing is cool, man, because there's so many people of our general age who are running around the gyms. I mean, I'm amazed at some of the people I see in the gyms.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people in their 60s. There was one guy, I swear to you, this is a true story. One guy, the other day I was at the gym,
yeah.
And this guy had to be at least in his mid-70s.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the
good for him. What's he thinking? What's he think he's going to stave off at that point?
I don't know, but
he
looked great.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, one of the personal trainers says, well, how often do you come in? He says, I come in 5 days a week. That's too much.
Oh, really?
You should cut back.
Yeah?
I said, cut back? Wait a minute. He's paying good money here. What are you talking about? Yeah, no, you don't need to do this more than 3 times a week at most.
Give the dude something to do.
Yeah.
I was running a lot. You know, I dropped a bunch of weight a couple of years ago when I quit smoking. I just started running compulsively. And it just starts to beat you up if you're not careful. There's got to be some... I wish I didn't have to do everything to the extreme. I wish I didn't have to do everything to get some sort of, you know, weird, deep satisfaction. I wish I could just mildly do something. Or my expectations weren't the exact same expectations I have out of sex or, you know, eating ice cream. You know what I mean? Like, if I start running, like, I got to run my ass off just to, you know, just to get the buzz. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's never about, like, you know, fitness for me. It's always about, you know, like, I don't want to get fat, number one. And number two, I want to get high.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
But without controlled substances.
Right, without controlled substances, which is difficult. You should see me now, you know, that I'm smoking a cigar every now and then. Some days I'll just sit there playing my guitar, smoking a cigar, drinking an iced coffee, you know, working up to the internet.
Didn't Robert Johnson kind of...
Yeah, that's exactly what Robert Johnson did. He was a 41-year-old Jewish neurotic man sitting alone in his two-bedroom apartment with four cats playing the blues with a cigar and an iced coffee. That was the birth of the blues, my friend.
That's right. And that was the deal he made with Beelzebub, too.
I think I blew it on my deal with the devil. I think I was offered a deal with the devil years ago, and I actually said, you know what, I don't think so. You know, I'm starting to think maybe I should have taken it, but I had some other... The bargaining thing. You know, when you make a deal, when you're offered a deal with the devil, you know, you're going to sacrifice something for the other thing. And I think I was I'm being sort of nonspecific. I'm actually talking about this like, you know, maybe another time we'll go into that time that I met the devil. You know what I mean?
Which coast was that?
That's a story for another day because I'm not sure I'm legally, if I'm not legally obliged not to talk about the devil. You know what I mean?
The devil's not Port of Goss, is it?
Well, you know, dude, I mean, I don't know. He's clearly working with the devil on some level. Oh, I remember what I wanted to do.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Denny Hastert, catch. Anyways, it's a little liberal lead
for
the good speaker. So, yeah, well, Porter Goss is now, he's, of course, the Republican nominee for CIA head.
Yes, Congressman Porter Goss.
Supposedly nonpartisan position. Yeah, right.
From Florida.
Yeah, right. And he said on Monday that some pre-war statements by senior Bush administration officials might well have overstated available intelligence about the threat posed by Iraq. Why don't you just say lie, fabricated, BS?
Well, you know, Carl Levin, Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, who
loved
he spoke
that guy.
To. Yeah,
loved
yeah,
that guy.
Really good guy. Goss was responding to a question from him. Because, you know, the Democrats are saying, wait a minute, You know, you have been up until now a partisan Republican. How are you now going to shed your partisanship in order to actually, you know, direct the Central Intelligence Agency, which and you know, during a time of promised change?
And then he started wriggling like Houdini trying to get out of a straitjacket. He's like, I'm trying to shed my partisanship, and I can't. Just give me a couple minutes. Yeah, go ahead.
So what he says is, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, they were exaggerating a little about all of these ties with weapons of mass destruction.
You mean like this one? January 28, 2003. The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
Yellow cake, baby.
That's what Bush said in his State of the Union address.
Yep.
Or how about this one? April 14, 2003. 11 mobile laboratories buried outside Karbala, Iraq, identified the U.S. military as biological and chemical weapons labs.
Right. That would be one of them. That would be one of the overstatements.
Yeah, May 16th, 2004, Powell says that the CIA was wrong about the labs. Well, good for him.
Yeah. Isn't he wonderful? Remember the presentation he made? Was that I think it was to the United Nations.
Yeah.
When he had all of those visual aids and stuff.
Yeah, see this little vial?
Yeah.
If this were a biological warfare contaminant agent stuff, millions would die. If this were blow, it'd probably hold me for about 3 hours.
Yeah, right. It's sad. But this just goes to show, how badly Porter Goss actually wants to be Director of Central Intelligence. That he's now turning on Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice, which I think both of them may get even with them for doing. But bottom line, he's saying, look, maybe some of this stuff was overstated. But notice he did not say George W. Bush overstated a single word. Not a word.
Because that's a given, apparently, even in Republican circles today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even they're starting to turn on him. Like, look at this. You know, did you read this? Republican Senator Lincoln Chafee.
Oh, yeah, from Rhode Island.
Said Monday he plans to support his party in November, but may write in a candidate instead of voting for president.
Yeah, right.
Who's he going to write in? I'm just going to put my name.
Well, you know, the Chafees have a very long and storied political history in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln Chafee, in fact, is filling in or actually assumed
Rhode Island. Long Island. It's okay.
Sorry. No, Rhode Island.
Yes, sir.
He's taking the seat that his father had, John Chafee. John Chafee, I believe, passed away. And Lincoln Chafee took that seat in November of 1999. So this is not some lightweight. He is a moderate. He has been a bit of a maverick when it comes to some of the Bush administration initiatives. But writing in, I wonder who would you write in if you were a Republican who couldn't vote for George W. Bush?
I'll tell you one thing, Mark Riley. What just happened there is why I love Mark Riley. Because when I read the guy's name off of the piece of paper here, I didn't even know how to pronounce his last name. I just got a whole history of his family. That is unbelievable. Give us a call. I'm going to work on the writing thing. 866-303-2270. We'll be right back on Air America Radio. Call us here at Morning Sedition at 666.
Wait a minute.
Oh, sorry. That's the mark of the beast.
That's 866-303-2270.
That's 866-303-2270.
Taking on sensible debt has long been a way for families to achieve their long-term goals, like buying a house or sending their children to college. But here's a reality check. Today's households are borrowing more than ever to reach those goals, and more often than not, just to make ends meet. Average credit card debt among families with at least one card has grown by $5,000 in just 10 years. Seniors who could once expect to own their homes by retirement are now facing mortgage payments well into their golden years and depleting their savings in the process. With expenses on the rise and wages staying put, the middle class cream may be getting too expensive for the middle class. No wonder 90% of bankruptcy filers are now middle income families. At the Century Foundation, we have ideas for restoring the American dream. When we know the facts, we can find real solutions. Get informed. Visit the Century Foundation online at www.centuryfoundation.org. That's www.centuryfoundation.org.
Pontiac Grand Am.
Oh.
I started getting this noise. I guess it would be a combination of a flute and a bass drum.
perfect harmony. Car Talk, weekends at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern on NPR Now 106 and noon on Sirius NPR Talk 107.
How does arguing with your spouse affect your kids? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. Some family experts say that lots of arguing results in more aggression between kids. But there's an upside to observing conflict between parents. When you handle it properly, kids can learn how to discuss problems and how to resolve them. And they can see that relationships and family life improve as a result. So, it's okay to disagree openly and calmly with your spouse, as long as you respect and listen to one another. Focus on working toward a solution and not letting anger get the better of you. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find out about ways you can build a stronger family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
In today's world, all voices must be heard. That's why our local Optimist Club sponsors an oratorical contest for local young people. The contest lets kids gain experience in public speaking.
If I could change the world.
It inspires today's youth to motivate and inform others through the art of public speaking. And it gives them an opportunity to compete for college scholarships. The Optimist Oratorical Contest.
You can make a difference too.
Bringing out the best in kids.
Past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. It's my buddy Mark Riley.
You.
We're on Air America Radio, and we're broadcasting from New York City.
Live.
Live from New York City is where we are broadcasting from. The sun is up. It's beautiful. I wish I could see out of the studio. It's weird. Every time you go out to the bathroom, it's like, hey, look, there's the day. Now I'm going to go back into the bunker. The timeless bunker. It's like Vegas in here, only with a clock. And our life is run by it. Looks like we got a call. St. Paul, Minnesota. Matt, good morning.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hey, that woman from the Center for American Progress scared the life out of me with the fact that Bush is going to make us all individual customers of health insurance companies and no more employer coverage. Okay, here's my question.
Okay.
Where is the battleground ad, okay, repeated over and over and over again with the perfect key demographic couple wondering out loud how they're going to afford to pay for their health insurance now that Bush has ended employer coverage? Gee, it's $1,000 a month. It's $3,000 a month. How are we going to pay for
them? Yeah.
Remember the ads 4 years ago?
Sure.
Or when was it? When the old
the couple.
People?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that? That swung 6 million votes or something, didn't it?
Yeah. I think. I'm not sure of the numbers, but I think it did have some impact. And I think that's a good idea. And we're gonna forward that right now.
I think they may be shooting that spot as we speak.
Matt, I'm gonna call John Kerry now. And I'm going to call the Democratic National Committee, because we got a lot of pull there, as you can tell by the number of times John Kerry's been on our show, that we're just going to take care of that ad. It's a good idea. I forgot to do the Palm Pilot, you know, because you know what? I think in my head, in the back of my head, I'm kind of pissed at Ramon, because I just gave him $100. Now, he's probably, I don't even know. Anyways, here's the president's schedule for today. 7 o'clock a.m., wake up, stay on message. I am a United Nations of One. 8:10 a.m., meet with Prime Minister of India, discuss the filth and violence coming out of Bollywood. 9:20 a.m., meet with U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan. Note, if he starts talking about our illegal war in Iraq, confront him with a wad of unpaid U.N. parking tickets. Thanks, Giuliani. 10:30 a.m., speak to the U.N. General Assembly. Note, make sure there are translators for the English-speaking nations. 12:15 p.m., meet with the Prime Minister of Iraq. Note, tell him it's better to burn up than to fade away. 1:15 p.m., attend luncheon given by the U.N. Secretary General. Invade buffet unilaterally before getting a resolution. 3:20 p.m., meet with the Prime Minister of Japan. Hey, ask him why Datsun changed their name to Nissan. Note, this has bothered me for years. Me too, actually. I had a B210. That was my first car. A little weird, kind of crap brown B210. Anyways, 4:05 p.m., meet with the president of Afghanistan. Ask him how America's Operation Cut and Run is going.
4:40 p.m., meet with the presidents of Pakistan and Afghanistan, flip coin to see which side gets to release Osama in October, then break tension by making America stand joke. 7:25 p.m., visit with Sister Nirmala, the Superior General for the Missionaries of Charity. Note, mention my extensive work of providing relief for the extremely wealthy. 8:45 p.m., attend reception. Note, tell hilarious anecdotes about all the funny talking a-holes I met today. And 11 p.m., bedtime. Note, schedule 2 weeks vacation to make up for today. There you go.
Mm.
Hey, Congressman Tom DeLay, catch. A little liberal led. Here we go. Who do we got? Michael in Dallas. How are you?
Hey, Michael.
Hi there.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not a lot.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call and say that after listening to Air America Radio for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months now,
mm-hmm.
that Mark Riley's my favorite guy on the radio.
Well, that's nice, Mark. Look at that,
well, thank
man.
You very much for the checks in the mail, Michael.
You've got a, got a powerful following of one guy named Michael in Dallas.
Well, hey.
He stays calm and he informs the public.
What are you talking about, man? I mean, I don't understand what, you know,
no,
what
I like,
that...
I like, you're funny as hell, but no, he really, he gives me all the information on the background. I love that stuff.
I'm kidding. I was just kidding. I was acting not calm to make a point, but I apparently...
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the love, though, Michael. Honest.
You bet.
I appreciate
take care.
Uh-oh. No more calls this segment.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead, man.
Oh, man. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, you
I'm kidding, man. I think it's great, man. It's great that that guy likes you.
Yeah?
Debbie in New York, how are you?
Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm on the way to work, but I just caught you guys.
Okay.
My comment is this.
Yes.
We know that we're going after the swing voters. Everybody knows that.
Yes.
But until now, Kerry's finally, like last night at Letterman's, finally starting to attack the Iraq issue so that we get the young students voting who are, you know, ABB, but they can't pick up enthusiasm for Kerry.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, I was a dean leader up here.
Okay.
I'm not a big Kerry guy, but obviously we have to get Bush out.
So yes.
We've got to get the young people on board. We need those votes. And
okay.
We need the women's vote.
Right.
Why is Kerry and the Democrats, why are they not bringing up more of the Supreme Court issue like these morons are going to support appoint one or two Supreme Court justices, Roe v. Wade goes out the window. You know, there's 50 million women, apparently, that didn't vote
mm-hmm.
in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they not emphasizing this? Why are they ignoring us women?
I think it's a good question, and I think that, you know, the God Isn't Kerry Hot campaign did not really take off like it was supposed to with the women. But maybe he will be addressing those issues, hopefully in the debates, and you know, and I hope to God he does, because there has been a little bit of slippage with women, apparently.
I was just going to say that
yeah.
there has been some slippage with women. Women seem to be, and you know, you hate to generalize about this, but when you look at some of the polling data, it tells you that women are very much concerned about national security, about safety.
Yeah.
And for whatever reasons. Some women are starting to gravitate toward Bush on the safety issue.
Yeah, I don't want to generalize, but the skirts are scared. That's basically what the... I like the way you qualified that. Like, I don't want to, you know.
Nah.
Of course, I'm kidding. But, you know, what you're saying is true.
Yeah, and what it takes to get them back is to speak to their issues, which is what Debbie exactly is talking about. You know, come back to Roe v. Wade. Come back to health care. Because
I think,
women
yeah.
end up really getting shafted a lot of times.
It's interesting
by
that we haven't heard some of that stuff, especially, you know, given the concessions that are being made, you know, in abortion law because of some of the people that Bush has appointed and some of the arguments that have been made recently. I thought that he was great on Letterman last night.
Well, the sound bites that I've heard, because I didn't actually see Letterman, although I was up almost that late, the sound bites sound really good. He sounds relaxed and focused.
Yeah, he was kind of funny, too, and he's quick. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. And he needs more of that.
And he brought the war into his court, you know what I mean?
Yes.
He is dictating, as you said before, that the terms of the debate. Riley's got a following, and it's beautiful.
In Dallas, man.
It's
in
beautiful,
Dallas,
man.
Texas.
So actually, I talk to people all the time that are friends of mine that are like, dude, man, you're so lucky Riley is there.
I pay all of them. All right?
So we're going to talk to Sidney Blumenthal when we come back about Iraq, which is great.
And we're going to talk, we're not going to talk about it. We're going to do the presidential daily briefing
okay.
and the liberal agenda
beautiful.
And much, much more. And you're listening to Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
Are you losing your hair? Dr. Gary Gordon, Chief Medical Director at the world-renowned Gordon Research Institute, describes exciting new research guaranteed to solve your hair problem.
New data released by the FDA indicates that the body chemical dehydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT, is the leading cause of hair loss. At our institute, we studied numerous hair loss treatments and found that Folinex is the most effective solution for stimulating new hair growth in balding areas. If you want to stop DHT from causing any further hair loss, then I strongly recommend that you try Folinex now. Folinex's DHT blocker has been used successfully for over 8 years by tens of thousands of men and women. Folinex is powerful enough to regrow hair on virtually anyone, we guarantee it.
Folinex is available for a limited time at half the price of other competitors. Folinex is guaranteed to work for you. So order risk-free now by calling 800-256-8214. That's 800-256-8214. Call 800-256-8214.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President Bush is preparing for an appearance before the United Nations General Assembly today, where he's expected to update the international community about his administration's efforts in Iraq. His national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, says things are better now in Iraq than they were 3 months ago, even with the increased violence. There are more signs this morning that the race between President Bush and John Kerry is tightening up. The president is no longer enjoying a post-convention bounce in the competitive states, with Kerry chipping away on his lead in many. Federal authorities have stepped up surveillance in New York after receiving word of a possible assassination attempt on President Bush. A British ambassador in Rome described President Bush as the best recruiting sergeant ever for the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. And the Pentagon concedes to broad shortfalls in U.S. training and equipping of Iraqi security forces. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
You know college football. You want interviews with the top college coaches in the country. You want analysis from the very best in the business, and you want it now. Sirius is now offering college sports radio with the Sirius College Coaches Show. 3 hours of the very best analysis for Saturday's game with Coach Terry Bowden and legendary college announcer Jack Arute.
The Sirius College Coaches Show, 9 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern, Saturdays on Sirius Sports Action 123.
This is Earth and Sky. Tatiana Irvine in New York City wants to know, can a lost bee become accepted into a new hive?
Tatiana, bees don't get lost very often. They're expert navigators. Studies have shown that bees navigate by keeping track of their net direction and distance from home. They use the sun as a reference point for direction. And to measure distance, they monitor the flow of visual input from the ground whizzing by. Plus, they notice how much energy they use on a trip.
Each bee colony has its own distinct scent. The scent comes from a range of factors, including the food the bees eat, the location of the hive, and even the ratio of adults to larvae. Still, if a bee does get lost, it can be accepted into a new colony. Honeybee colonies have guard bees posted at their entrances to ward off strangers. When a guard bee approaches a lost bee who wanders in, the lost bee can adopt a posture that signals it means no harm. The lost bee is usually accepted, especially if it has some nectar or pollen to offer.
Once a lost bee is accepted into a new colony, it lies low for a while and absorbs the scent of its new location. After a few days, the bee smells like the rest of the colony and becomes an indistinguishable colony member.
Tatiana, thanks for your question, and with thanks to the National Science Foundation, we're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Wow, man, all that love for Riley from Dallas made him kind of cocky. He just sort of took off, and here I am alone in the studio. He comes running.
Mark, sorry.
Mark Maron here, Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio, and we are broadcasting from the beautiful city of New York. Now it's time to look at the Presidential Daily Briefing, that highly classified, top-secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is entitled, Novak Tells Truth for First Time, Threatens Carefully Tended Info Bubble. Mr. President, it's come to our attention that the normally loyal and reliable party hack Bob Novak, a.k.a. Novakula, has written a column saying that the U.S. may cut and run from Iraq next year, regardless of whether Iraq is stable or not. This information presents two clear threats to your presidency. One, that it is 100% factual and the truth has never been a welcome presence in this administration. And two, that it came from one of our most trusted lackey mouthpieces, a man who could be counted on to out undercover CIA agents at our bidding. Years of bellowing lies and years of paladin abuse may have finally unhinged Novak to the point where he may no longer be an effective carrier of our message. It is our recommendation that we discredit Novak. Any sort of sexual scandal involving this man will create such a repulsive mental picture among the American people that he will be quickly ushered out of the chattering classes. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. Let's talk to Sydney about that. On the phone right now, Washington Bureau Chief of Salon.com, a former assistant senior advisor to President Clinton and the author of The Clinton Wars. Please welcome Sydney Blumenthal to the show. Good morning, Sydney.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey. Morning.
Morning, Mark.
Sydney, did you read this thing that Novak wrote?
I did.
Well, what is that about? Can you help me out? I mean, I hate this guy. You know, I find anything he does to be suspect. Why this piece?
It's a very interesting piece, if true.
Maybe I should.
What you know is that the New York Times reported that the Bush administration plans a post-election offensive in Iraq, not before, because there would be outrageous casualties, including huge civilian casualties, against Fallujah and all the towns in western Iraq that are under control of the insurgents. Why they wait? No military commander, no one on the ground, if you're going to launch this, says you should ever wait for something like this.
Right.
They're doing it. It shows that the war right now is being conducted entirely for political reasons. Now, Novak says that they plan to cut and run in any case. Now, they have no strategy for that whatsoever. So they're going to launch an offensive, and then they're going to cut and run, according to Novak. Then the buried news in Novak's column, he sort of buried the lead, is he says who's going to be the name to the lead national security cabinet post in a second Bush term.
Stephen Hadley.
Stephen Hadley, head of the National Security Council, the man who admits that he lied about putting into the president's State of the Union the famous false statement about Saddam having nuclear weapons.
Right.
Condi Rice, constant misleader,
mm-hmm.
Put it euphemistically, about WMD, about this famous 9/11 August 6th document, as Secretary of State, and who as Secretary of Defense?
Paul Wolfowitz.
Wolfowitz of Arabia.
The Straussian devil himself.
Wolfowitz, whose incompetence is unrivaled and who has contributed as much as anybody to the current catastrophe.
Right.
Sydney, why would Paul Wolfowitz, one of the leaders of the neoconservative cabal that got us in Iraq in the first place, why would, and this is the one thing that puzzled me about Novak's column, why would he support a pullout?
I can't imagine he would, except for, this is just sheer conjecture,
On behalf of Novak.
On behalf of Novak.
You mean he's acting like a gas bag?
It's hard to get caught up in a pundit like Novak's, speculations. What I will say also about Novak is...
he's horrible.
We do know that Bob Novak... outed Valerie Plame, the undercover CIA agent,
in
an act of intimidation against her husband, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson, because undertaking a mission from the administration at their behest, he had shown that there were no purchases of uranium in Niger on the part of Saddam Hussein, and therefore the entire nuke threat, the mushroom cloud, the so-called smoking gun, did not exist. So somebody had to be punished, and why not commit a felony against national security? Now, the investigation's ongoing. The reporters are all talking. Let's see where it goes. But what's interesting to me, among many, many other things, is... we've seen Dan Rather commit a journalistic error in not checking enough on these documents. We've seen the press, large parts of the press, devote their investigative resources to checking that. But not one story, not one, on who are Bob Novak's sources.
Right. And this just came out yesterday. I hope maybe something will happen. You don't think anyone's going to look into it?
No, because it's about the press itself.
Isn't it amazing that they're railing on, all these Republican pundits and freak show guys that, you know, they're asking for his resignation, yet they can't even hold their own president to the same standard as far as truthful documents and whatnot?
Well, E.J. Dionne has an incredibly interesting column today in the Washington Post in which he says, look, Rather admitted an error and came clean.
Yes.
Now it's time for Bush.
Exactly.
Come clean. Tell us what you did in the Guard.
Right.
Now, some of the documents are supposed to be released on the 24th, which is 3 days from now, because the Associated Press filed a suit against the White House under the Freedom of Information Act, and the U.S. Federal District Court judge in New York ruled they had to release the documents after they were stonewalling. Let's see whether they release the documents and what's in them as well, and whether they ask even more questions. But one thing we do know is Bush is stonewalling.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about maybe a little of that and also your piece about losing the war in Iraq when we come back after this break. All right, Sydney?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back on Air America Radio.
Your team takes possession and races toward the end zone. The roar of the crowd is deafening, except to you, because you are the team mascot.
Hey, guys.
And inside your big furry suit,
it's real hard to see out of this thing.
The game sounds just a little bit different.
Guys?
The NCAA on Sirius. Get in on the excitement. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast schedule.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do? Tell other people? Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
Okay, go ahead.
I have something very important.
Good.
To talk to dads about reading with your children. Most kids want to read. If you spend even a little time with them every night, it will help a lot. It will help motivate. What's this word?
Take each letter at a time.
Motivate.
Good job.
What's it mean?
Well, it means to encourage or, you know, help someone do something better.
Help motivate them to try harder, which can help them become better readers even faster.
Excellent.
When kids read better, it builds their confidence, and that can make a big difference in a kid's life while they grow up.
You're getting really good.
Thanks, Dad.
Keep going.
Reading with you.
For more ideas on how to be a better dad, call 1-800-790-DADS. This has been a message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
All right, what do you want to read next?
You give me power.
This is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. And remember, don't drink and drive. It's just not worth it.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're on the phone with Washington Bureau Chief of Salon.com. Salon's Washington Bureau Chief, however you want to say it. He's the author of The Clinton Wars. He was also a senior advisor for President Clinton. It's Sydney Blumenthal. Sydney, before we get off the Bob Novak thing, let me just ask you if you could speculate on why would they send a trial balloon like this up? What is the political What does it mean?
There's no real purpose. I don't believe it's a trial balloon.
Okay.
Novak is used by all sorts of people.
sounds like a hooker.
I don't believe that this Bush administration was using him.
Okay, so the only thing we can hope for is that he sits in at night and lays in bed and cries looking at his teeth in a glass. Okay, Sydney, you didn't have to laugh at that. There's no requirement for you to engage with me comedically. What about your article? Now, you're saying, basically, you've talked to a lot of military people that the war in Iraq is being lost.
There's no question. All of Bush's stated objectives have been lost. No WMD. The idea of establishing a democracy is gone.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. The idea that somehow we would pay for the war through Iraqi oil is gone. And you can go through the whole list, but none of Bush's objectives have been met. They're all lost. Furthermore, the western part of the country is now under control of insurgents. And I talked to the leading retired senior military generals about this. General Joseph Hoar, who was the head of CENTCOM, Marine Commandant. Talked to General William Odom, who was the head of the National Security Agency. They tell me that this is the majority opinion among the serving officer corps of the U.S. right now, and that they have never seen such a division of opinion between the senior level military and an incumbent administration, including Vietnam. That there's never been a worse division of opinion about what's going on, because the administration keeps following a policy of no strategy that is bringing us deeper into the abyss.
Yeah.
And the military is paying the price for their failure, and the war is already lost following this strategy. I've also spoken to the leading experts at the military war colleges who also agree with this, and they contend that Bush has absolutely no strategy and that all of his objectives are already lost and he's pursuing failed objectives.
So it's unrecoverable at this point.
If you keep Bush in and you follow this plan, it's not only unrecoverable, but it will get far, far worse. With as dire as the consequences are, they will get much worse.
Sidney Blumenthal,
and let me just add one thing. That's according to the best minds and the highest-ranking people in the United States military.
Now, when you talk about the possibility of going, for example, and attacking Fallujah, that in and of itself might be a good thing, recapturing the country. But isn't there an issue here about securing Iraq's borders and the number of soldiers it would actually take to do that? What are your military experts telling you about the number of troops that will be needed to secure the borders so the terrorists, you know, don't have free access in and out of the country?
Well, I spoke with General Hoar about that, and his view was that obviously the United States could capture the town. We have the military power easily, the force to do that. The problem is this, that the bad guys have already made their plans to escape. There'd be huge civilian casualties. I spoke with Andrew Terrell, who's the lead Iraq expert at the Army War College. He's a leading Iraq expert at the for strategy, you know, in the U.S. in one of them in the U.S. military.
Yeah.
And his view is that if you did that, it's very possible and likely that the Iraqi government, which is not elected, by the way, we're having a Lowy visit on Thursday. Remember, he's not elected. Will collapse. That many of the ministers simply will not be able to sustain politically within the Iraqi political equation, staying in office, and so. The idea that of a military solution to this problem will create a greater political crisis, and you could have no Iraqi government of any kind.
Incredible. Sidney, can John Kerry get the job done? He's being slammed on in some quarters because people don't think he's really got a plan for Iraq.
Well, let me say this about Kerry's speech yesterday. Kerry's speech yesterday was a thoroughgoing indictment of the Bush lies and blunders from the beginning, from the rationale to the war, which was a lie, to the way in which the war is conducted and the way in which Bush is denying reality now in order to retain this failed non-strategy.
Right.
Kerry laid out 4 points of a proposal that he cannot do because he is not president, but he suggested that President Bush do this now. 1 point involves what Bush could do today, this very day, Tuesday, and which Bush is not doing, and that is, while he is at the UN, to call a meeting of the world leaders who are gathered there, and they are there, to discuss how to engage in practical international cooperation on Iraq, and to use certain measures as incentives to bring people in who haven't been in before. Right now, the British are cutting a third of their force.
Well, yeah, I read about that yesterday.
Are cutting and running.
The Polish are as well.
We're talking about, you know, the Fiji Islanders. We're talking about the British are leaving. So what has Bush done today? Nothing. He goes, he gives his empty speech, and he cuts and runs from New York and runs to a fundraiser. Bush is doing nothing to follow the Kerry plan. Now, Kerry's not in control. No one knows how bad the situation will be in January when a new president takes office. So Kerry can only propose what Bush should do. And Bush, as we know now, has failed and is not listening.
He's just going to stay committed to his lie.
He is committed to the road of failure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sidney Blumenthal. Always informative and great talking to you.
Appreciate it.
Mark. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, you take care. And after the break, when we come back, Sidney mentioned 4 points of change that Kerry would institute if he were president. And as advice to this president, I have the other 3. We'll go over that when we come back. It's 50 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
Are Americans better off than we were 4 years ago? In a new national poll conducted by Mother Jones Magazine, a strong majority of registered voters from across the country claim that the United States has gotten pretty seriously off on the wrong track. And half of those surveyed voted for George W. Bush in the 2000 presidential election. Take the poll yourself and view the complete results at MotherJones.com. Also at MotherJones.com, your daily mojo. Every day, the editor of Mother Jones scour the web for the day's most important stories and post them for you online. Mother Jones, strange name for a magazine, but take a look, see what you think.
You know college football. You want interviews with the top college coaches in the country. You want analysis from the very best in the business, and you want it now. Sirius is now offering college sports radio with the Sirius College Coaches Show. 3 hours of the very best analysis for Saturday's game with Coach Terry Bowden and legendary college announcer Jack Arute.
The Sirius College Coaches Show, 9 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern, Saturdays on Sirius Sports Action 123.
Wash off the blackboard. Put away the books. Take down the posters.
Put away the gym balls.
Empty out our desks.
Scrape our names off the lockers.
Pull our drawings off the walls.
Put it all in the garbage.
Throw it away.
Throw it all away.
AIDS has killed more children worldwide than there are in all the grade schools in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, Atlanta, and Miami combined. The time to do something is now. The place is apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
A public service announcement brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Conservation International applies innovations in science, economics, policy, and community participation to protect the Earth's richest natural regions. Their objective is to conserve plant and animal diversity in major tropical wilderness areas and key marine ecosystems. With headquarters in Washington, D.C., CI works in more than 30 countries on 4 continents. For more information about CI's programs, please visit www.conservation.org.
about the issues.
And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature.
Man, I dropped a joke there on Sidney, man. Nothing.
Nope.
Nothing. Left me hanging. We had important things to talk about. We're here. We're coming in for landing. It's 54 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition, which is on Air America Radio, which is broadcasting here out of New York City. The sun is up. It looks like a crisp fall day, as it was yesterday. Unless I don't even know, actually. I just saw light coming in the window. But yesterday was beautiful. I love this time of year. The other 3 points that Kerry made in how he would handle Iraq differently and as advice to the president, which I thought he should say that what he would do. But actually, now that Sidney talked about it, I'm like, that's actually a pretty good tactic, is to defy the president to take his advice. And then when he doesn't, then he can say, this is what I should, what I would have done. This is what I'm going to do because I'm president now. The other one was, the other three are improved training of Iraqi security forces, retool Iraqi reconstruction plans to benefit Iraqis. That's genius.
That's crucial.
Yes. And that means, like, you know, like, stop all this private contract, you know, fixed bidding, and really, you know, give it back to the Iraqi people. Immediate steps to guarantee next year's elections, you know, really start to make it, to engage the Iraqi people in a way that isn't defensive.
But you know what? Bush can't do the United Nations thing.
Not and maintain his lie. Not maintain the stance and the monsters that he's created out there that think the United Nations is some sign of the Antichrist. All right, and also we got in just now the Bush-Kerry debate rules. 90 minutes per debate, at least 16 questions in each debate, 2 minutes for responses, no camera shots of candidates reacting to the other. Candidates cannot approach each other. No direct questions to each other. No height-adding devices. These are real, man. No TV camera shots from behind. No touching. This is interesting because these were negotiated, I imagine, by James Baker, who was brought in to negotiate these terms. And some of them are very, very interesting and telling, you know, that the candidates cannot approach each other. Now, this is interesting for politicians, especially because so many of them are sort of buddy-buddy behind the scenes that, you know, they can't even act like they're decent, you know, like they're decent sort
normal
of
people.
Right. No touching from behind. No crotch stuffing. No overt displays of education. Interesting. Candidates must limit words to 4 syllables or less. No notes, charts, or other writings. No finger puppets, of course, after that, you know, debacle during the Nixon-Kennedy thing. No props. No smoke machines or laser effects. Candidates cannot arrive on stage to music from 2001. Not again, not this year. Each candidate will use their own makeup artist, you know, because we know, you know, you don't want to get out there and like, why does Bush have mascara on? Oh, damn, they got us. And candidates may not wear KISS makeup, which is disappointing because that screws up all of the Bush surprise looking funny angle. Unbelievable. You know, what's weird is that many of those were real, but I'm not going to say which one.
Which one? Yeah. I knew you were.
So, Riley, you're gonna take care of business after this?
Yeah, I gotta take care of a little business.
Yeah.
I gotta go to the doctor, watch him pull out a pair of pliers and a needle.
And take care of your toe.
Take care of my toe. On the eve of my birthday, I am going under the knife.
To get a little piece of toenail.
Yeah.
Isn't that a nice way to end our show? Like, you know, Riley getting some infected toenail piece removed.
Yeah, but I'm a punk about these things.
you're gonna be crying.
Don't hurt me.
There's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. 1. Praise 60 Minutes for encouraging promising new fiction writers. 2. Criticize Kerry's appearance on Letterman. Way too much humor. There's a famine in Sudan, you know. 3. Praise Madonna's pilgrimage to Israel for illustrating the beauty and profundity of celebrity hobby religions. Religions. LL. Religions. 4. Praise Macaulay Culkin's arrests for illustrating the beauty and profundity of celebrity drug experimentation. 5. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Of course the 60 Minutes memos were fake, and the Republicans fell right into our trap. Yeah.
Coming up on tomorrow's Morning Sedition, former spook Larry Johnson is back on the show to tell us all about how the Republicans are kind of reforming America's intelligence apparatus only 3 years after September 11th. That's tomorrow's Morning Sedition here on...